All right, you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
Welcome to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. You may know us. We've been on before. My name is Kevin.
And this is Michael. Welcome, welcome.
So let's get into this first. What is Sound Sessions? Sound Sessions is the WGN Radio All Things Music show. And this is, like we were saying, this is our Super Bowl.
Yeah, this is it. It's Lollapalooza time. Chicago is alive. The sound is loud. And we are here to talk all things Lollapalooza, all things music. But mainly we want to talk to you. So give us a call at 312-981-7200. We also can be found all over the World Wide Web, I guess you call it.
Well, let's do that. Let's get our proppers out of the way. Where to find us? Like Michael just mentioned, you can call us at 312-981-7200. You can also text that number, and we would love to hear from you. If you want to tweet at us, if you're a tweeter, we are, what is it? At SoundSeshPod.
I'm a tweeter.
We are tweeters.
SoundSeshPod. You can check us out on Instagram, SoundSessionsWGN.
I'm proud of you that you're not even looking at your social media list right now.
I've got it down.
You do. I'm looking and I'm like, okay, this one. And then you're
You know what it is? All Lollapalooza weekend, I've been trying to keep up with social media, and it is like a job, isn't it?
It really is. It's a lot.
So it's been drilled into my brain.
Okay, so actually, I just guessed on our email. Is it soundseshpod@gmail.com?
Yes, soundsessionspod@gmail.com.
Okay, soundsessionspod.
That's probably why we don't get any emails. It's because we need to get that down first.
@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, just Sound Sessions Podcast, iTunes.com/soundsessions.
And we have the plethora of all of our interviews all conglomerated together. Those are a bunch of words that I don't really use very often. Those are some $5 words I just threw out there for you. But all of our audio pieces can be found on WGNradio.com. You can find everything there. Just search Sound Sessions.
That's right. So with that said, we've got a lot of Lollapalooza content coming on today. It's going to be a fun show.
I'm excited. We have, the Lollapalooza talk. So if you are coming from Lollapalooza, if you want to come down to the station and wave to us in the Allstate Showcase studio, come on down. We have an interview with Little Dragon, we mentioned before.
So Little Dragon played yesterday. Really great set. They have a new album out. And we talked to Yokimi.
Yokimi
of Little Dragon. She was really engaging. Then, as we had teased with Carl and Lisa, we'll be talking to Jake Clemens, who is he filled the shoes of his uncle in the E Street Band, Clarence Clemens.
The great Clarence Clemens. You know him. Bruce Springsteen is one of the most legendary artists of all time. And just imagine getting called up to the majors like that, like Jake did. I mean, not in the best kind of way that he probably wanted, but he's such a talented musician. And when you listen to the interview tonight, just listen to how sincere this person is about his music,
and
about his life, his fans.
He does. I mean, we'll get into that. Yeah. Liam Gallagher, about how Ben Clemens seems to really appreciate
Jake Clemens.
Jake, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's going to be a long.
Ben's probably like his half brother.
Man, it's going to be a long.
He plays
throwing
the triangle.
Out these big words, and I'm screwing up guest names. It's going to be a long night. But we're going to at 2:30 open up our what we call the vault, where we kind of just dish on a bunch of different typically music-based topics. We've got some other ones we'll throw in, and our friend Jerry Nunn from NunnOnTheRun.com is here. To talk about all the great after parties and all the great coverage he's doing at the festival. And he's like the Energizer Bunny.
You know what? I want to have the energy that Jerry has. This man is the man about town, the Nun on the Run. And that's actually where you can find him, nunontherun.com, if you want to keep up with all of his adventures. And we're looking at him right now.
Hi, Jerry.
What's going on, Jerry?
Hi, how are you guys?
We're doing really well. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well,
absolutely.
You were in the neighborhood.
Yes, it was perfect. This was meant to be.
Can you tease, before we really get into it, where were you?
Where was I tonight?
Before coming here, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So we were at this, there was a big party for WKQX. At the Savage Schmidt.
I don't know that station. It's probably good, but I don't know.
Probably not.
Well, you know. I was just at this party eating Nutella waffles.
Ooh, what?
Pretty great at
Nutella
the Savage
waffles.
Schmidt. Which I've never been to that space, but what a cool space.
Yeah, we had bumped into each other there. I was there before I got the few minutes of sleep before the show. Really great space. Did you even know that place existed?
No, I didn't.
Gorgeous outlook, but we'll save a little bit of that for the segment coming up.
It's right. And we do, I mean, this we are filling in for our good buddy Dave Plyer. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Dave Plyer.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Is he? Is it a big one for him? Like a big birthday? I don't want to like sell him out on the air, but I think it is.
Like Camille?
He turned the big 5-0.
That's what I thought.
Last week, 2 weeks ago?
Wow.
So he's off celebrating. So happy birthday, Dave Plyer. But with that said, we will hit the standard Dave Plyer element, the This Is History segment, and then we'll top it off with Walter's perspective, and that starts at 4:30 a.m. So what do you think? Should we kind of wrap this up, throw out a break, and then come back and just get into the Lala coverage?
Let's do it. Let's wrap it up. We have two texts before we go to break.
Sure.
For John, who's on right now? This is Sound Sessions, John. It's good to hear from you, my friend.
I know that John is an actual WGN fan because he knows the shift. Who's on from 2 to 5 a.m.? It's just not like who's on right now.
Yeah.
He knows the actual shift, so good on you, John.
He's a good man. He's a good man. And then listening down in Northeast Arkansas from the 870, great to hear from you. Call in if you have any Lala experiences yourself. I mean, it'd be great to, you know, just to toss around a few ideas. And by the way, I love Arkansas. What a great state.
I got family down there. Nice. So anyway, let's wrap this up real quick. We'll come back. We'll talk to Jerry. We'll talk further about all the Lollapalooza great things that are happening. You are listening to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio.
Oh, I was just going to let this roll for a little bit. This is our man, Chance the Rapper. Tonight was his night. Chance,
acid rapper. This is big night.
It's his big. It's probably the biggest night he's ever had. I think, you know, when he was on stage, he mentioned a few times that this was the biggest show ever. And oh my lordy, it was the biggest crowd I've ever seen. It was a sea of people, a sea of humanity.
Yeah, it was a mob of people. I was probably, oh man, I don't know, maybe a football field away, like, you know, 100 yards away from the stage. And it was just, as far as you could see, like all directions, just mobs of people. It was insane.
And you know what the interesting thing is the fact that he has this great connection to Chicago, and we were talking a little bit beforehand about, you know, his connection to the city. And all I want to do when I saw him on stage is just see him succeed. What a passionate guy. And it was great to see that many people there just to support him. He was playing tracks off his albums that no one's ever heard before. Well, people have heard before, but
some of the deeper cuts,
the deeper cuts. Who were some of the highlights from tonight? And by the way, we were joined with Jerry Nunn, too.
Nunnontherun.com.
That's right. Jerry, what were some of your highlights
for
tonight?
Well, I went to the XX, which I felt kind of bad for them because XX, you know who they are, right?
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Electronic.
But to go up against that, that's a tough.
Yeah, and so they're on the other end, you know. I was at the Tito's Lounge, which I loved all week.
Mm-hmm,
and they played, and it was a small crowd. And it was just so, you know, I mean, because everybody's going the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going against the tide. And then they played, and they were so good, but they just couldn't compete with Chance.
I think there was a bit of that going on throughout the festival. Where mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's poor planning, but, you know, you had last night, it was Blink-182 and The Killers going on at the same time. And
yeah.
I was talking to a friend about that, and you could argue that people that are a fan of one are likely a fan of the other. So why are you kind of, you know, putting them against each other?
Well, you had Lorde versus Muse.
Muse, yeah. Right, yeah.
And then it rained, and both of them got washed
out.
Yeah,
right, right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, there was that.
And then, of course, there was DJ Snake.
You've been listening for years.
Who is DJ Snake? I saw that. I feel so old when I look at the lineups year to year, because it's more and more EDM bands that I've been seeing, and I just couldn't put my finger on a few of these bands.
So this is Perry's stage, right?
Yes.
So Perry, being Perry Farrell, the man that brings you Lollapalooza,
mm-hmm.
And also known for Jane's Addiction. Yeah, so he's got an EDM stage, and, you know, if I'm not big on that music necessarily, but it's a spectacle. You have to go just check out the sound, or the stage and the crowd, because it's just, I mean, it's energetic, to say the least.
Yeah. And I think that he started out creating this Perry stage just because he wanted to be a DJ at his own show. And he, like, when DJing was kind of a newer thing back in the 90s. But that's why we have Jerry Nunn here. Jerry, you were at the first ever Lollapalooza.
I didn't even think about it till tonight. It's just been so long.
And it wasn't so in old. Chicago.
It was not in Chicago. I was in school and college at Western Kentucky, and a bunch of us just jumped in a car and we drove up to Cleveland, because it was, you know, it was a tour then, and they didn't come around Kentucky or Tennessee,
yeah.
So we had to drive to Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
And it was just a cool lineup, and it was the thing to do, and first year for it, and it was Jane's Addiction was there, mm-hmm. And Susie and the Banshees, Nine Inch Nails, Ice-T, And so they had, that's cool. Why I remembered it, because they had all the food was named after when they had sushi and a banshee.
Oh, really?
They had the Rollins burger named after Henry Rollins because he was there. And iced tea you could order, of course, and stuff like that. So that was fun.
It's cool that a lot of those bands are still doing it, actually. Like, still, Susie and the Banshee's still coming around.
Yeah.
You know, Ice-T, Nine Inch Nails is coming back for Riot Fest this year.
That's right. You know, I feel like Riot Fest is kind of, like, becoming the OG Lollapalooza. Because they make the food into the band names and kind of just have a more inclusive kind of feel these days. But but you can't beat Lollapalooza. That is a monster of a festival.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny to see how it's evolved.
For sure.
Because it kept touring for a long time, and that finally settled here, you know, years ago.
I think it's found its home here for sure.
Yeah, this is like my 7th year covering this thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I've got it down. Well, I got certain things down, I would say, not everything.
Well, I remember actually, too, I attended a Lollapalooza that was in Tinley Park, but it was the Tweeter Center at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it was like Jurassic 5 was there, Incubus, Rooney, the Donnas,
a bunch. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. And then just a few short years later, it was, you know, one of the first years in Chicago. And yeah, it's definitely become a summer staple here in Chicago.
It was Radiohead, right? Isn't Radiohead was the first one that kind of settled here? I don't remember.
Really?
I think it was Radiohead that was the first big one.
I remember the first one I came to in Chicago was Chili Peppers and Queens of the Stone Age. And
so when Lollapalooza was first starting, because I've been there 3 years. I just started going, you know, just 3 years ago. And was it 3 days always, or was it just one day in the beginning?
It was a tour, so
it just
so it was around different, you know, the big cities is where it went to. And you know, then it was three. So last year was the first year that did the 4 days, and I thought I was gonna die
because it just doesn't it's so stop. Much.
It's so much.
It's so much music, and it's just powerful, and so many acts, and it's hard to predict who's going to be big. You know, some of them are big within like the next year, and they all come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's great that you can finally get interviews, because it's tough to get interviews, right?
For sure.
And they want to promote their stuff, and they're going to be back within a year.
Well, that's just like what Chance said tonight on the stage. He said this is his 3rd year anniversary for Lollapalooza. And I can't imagine he was on that stage with that crowd 3 years ago. You know
what
I mean?
No. Yeah. Not at all. Because I was thinking about 4 years ago, Lana Del Rey was playing on one of the smaller stages, like, and then the next year she headlined the entire festival.
Yeah.
I'm predicting. I saw a guy yesterday. I just randomly walked into him. It was Kobe. I think it was COBI.
Mm-hmm.
This guy like had it in, I'm going to come out right now.
Kobe.
Justin Bieber has a great voice. This guy had the voice of Justin Bieber and then could slay on the guitar. He was like, you know, Gary Clark Jr. meets Justin Bieber.
Wow.
Totally great. Yeah. I was totally blown away. It was one of the small side stages, but he had a huge crowd. I'm predicting he will be back with a larger crowd on a larger stage very soon.
Okay, Kobe. That's going to be the one. Well, Jerry, what are you thinking? Who is your sleeper here?
Yeah. Let's just do the good and the bad.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I loved Bishop Briggs. I love that girl.
Okay.
She's got like the song called River and Wild Horses. She's got this powerful voice, and she was really fun to interview. She was great. Vance Joy was a big deal this time. He was like walking around. I thought George Ezra did a nice job.
Yeah, George Ezra.
I like him. He was a great past interview that I've been able to talk to. What else? You know, Vic Menza, we got to hang out with backstage a little bit.
Next
thing you know, he's with Chance, and they're suddenly friends again. I don't know. They hated each other for a while. They had some beef.
Yeah,
it's so hard to track.
Right. They squashed that beef.
They squashed the beef, and they're like best buddies now.
You know, it's a funny story about how we how we went backstage, too. Mm-hmm. So at Lollapalooza, Kevin, tell me if I'm wrong here. And listeners, please call in with any great backstage stories. Mainly, I like hearing about this. I snuck into this. I, you know, pulled a fast one on this person's stories. And that's, as we mentioned before, there's about 6 levels of VIP. And to go into this Red Bull artist lounge area, you needed to go through, you walk through this jungle, basically. This jungle tunnel, if I can kind of explain it. Mm-hmm. And you go in, and they didn't even check our passes. We walked right in, because what we were doing was craving Red Bull. at the time. We go backstage.
I'm just picturing like Wayne's World where you guys have the backstage passes. You have a little laminate and you're showing it to everybody.
Pass. We're not worthy.
Yeah. Like, well, there was a Red Bull pass and then they let you, if you were like a media four-day pass, I think they let some people back. So we were legal to be back.
Oh,
there.
We were.
Yeah, because I went back again. Because I wanted more Red Bull because I needed to stay away.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And I love the Tito's Lounge too.
The Tito's Lounge is fantastic.
I love that.
And Tito's is a great vodka too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was like shaded. The air-conditioned bathrooms.
That's a perk.
And we were in the middle, you know, we were at the Bud Light stage in the middle of that and the new Tito stage, which is the Petrillo Shell stage.
Oh, yeah.
So we're in the middle of that and we had some cover when it rained.
Mm-hmm.
And the mosquitoes were the only problem. I need some like off or something where I could spray myself because the mosquitoes are out of control. I think it's the wetness or
yeah.
something, right?
And you're so close to the lake too. I think that's something people kind of overlook that you're still dealing with the elements a little bit. You know?
Get some spray, you know.
You know,
spray.
That's funny you mentioned that. I'm holding in my hand right now all the stuff that I brought to Lollapalooza. You can hear right here. It's keys, contact solution, my wallet, a cell phone charger, and headphones. What kind of stuff do you guys bring to festivals to prepare yourself? Like, are you do you just go phone and wallet? Or?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, you got to bring the audio equipment if you're setting up the interviews, of course, right? But yeah, today I went basic. It was nice. We didn't have anything lined up. Went nice and easy. So I had no bag whatsoever, just my wallet and, you know, my phone.
That's
about
sweet.
It. Yeah, keys. It was great.
Well, I have to bring a really good camera because I want the good shots.
Right.
The cell phones are just not good shots. They're not flattering to the artists. They're not. They're okay if that's all you have. Mm-hmm. But I like to have my nice camera and get some zoom in and get some great shots.
Nice.
And then like I have my recorder and my notes and all of that stuff. But sunscreen would be. I would think would be something, and now bug spray.
Yeah, you'd think so. Hey, Camille, what about you? Let's get a female perspective on this. What kind of stuff do you bring to the festivals?
Usually, I didn't go this year, but when I usually go, trash bags to sit on.
It's a good idea.
And baby wipes.
What? Great ideas.
Yeah. Those
Which one? Baby wipes?
Yeah.
Festival hacks.
You never know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I could have used a little bit of the hand sanitizer. I kept, you know, it's a little bit dirty there.
Yeah.
A little? It turns into a mud pit, you know, eventually.
Mm-hmm. Can we get into Blink-182 yesterday?
Rockin'.
So I want to preface this, and I think you know this, Mike. I'm not typically a big fan of Blink-182.
No.
But I had never seen them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the addition of Matt Skiba of Chicago's own Alkaline Trio, and Skiba is was a Chicago native. I'm not sure if he lives here anymore. But anyway, I thought, you know, I just have to see him.
Mm-hmm.
So I stuck around for at least half their set, and I have to say I was totally blown away. Probably the highlight of the festival for me.
Blink-182.
Blink-182.
They were great.
They have,
you know what, these bands get an hour basically, okay? And if they have enough hits, it's just amazing to be out there. And Blink-182 is a perfect example, or Live is another good example.
Yeah.
Live,
People want these bands. I got to meet the singer, he was great.
Oh, cool.
But they...
tell me if I'm wrong here, does he not look like a bald Fred Armisen?
Yeah, I have to show you my pictures on my phone. But he was a super guy, and they're so happy to be back together. They had a breakup.
That's cool.
People like that kind of stuff. I remember Third Eye Blind was a big deal last year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you don't have to tell Kevin that. That's his
While
band.
I might not love Blink-182, I love
Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people like that. And, you know, the new people are fun, but sometimes they only have one recognizable song.
Yeah.
They save it to the end, you know. So that's a different experience. I just think people
I think there's something to that. That was like... Every song that Blink-182 played, it was just a scream-along for everybody in the crowd. And it was just so much fun. And everybody had, you know, it was just such a good vibe. And, Matt Skiba, I think, really... Me, personally, I like the Skiba Blink much better than the Tom DeLonge Blink.
You had mentioned this before. And, you know, it's very interesting to think that Blink-182 has put out so many great hits. They have hit after hit, CD after CD, platinum artist. With Matt Skiba was the first time they ever won a Grammy.
And it... Really?
Yeah.
I didn't.
First time ever.
That's incredible. Wow.
For their album California.
And I have to say, having for the first time ever seen Travis Barker in person, oh my God, that guy probably maybe one of the most iconic musicians of our time, I think.
When I was 16 years old, I went to the Pop Disaster Tour, and it's the first big tour that I wanted to go to ever with my brother and my dad and my mom. Green Day, Blink-182, and Alkaline Trio.
That's a great lineup.
Alkaline Trio opened up for Blink-182.
How cool is that?
However many years ago it was, I don't want to say my age. Let's just think that I'm an ambiguous age right now. But the show was so phenomenal, and seeing Travis Barker, when he was just getting started. They had just put out Take Off Your Pants and Jacket is the name of the album, and he had kind of like a Tommy Lee feel, and they hooked it up to a Roller Coaster, and he would do flips as he was doing his drum solos.
As if crazy drum solos weren't enough.
Oh my gosh. It was unreal.
I want to, after the news and break, we're going to do the Music Vault, right?
Yes.
Like I had mentioned.
I'm so excited.
The Music Vault is usually, we just riff on a bunch of different topics. It's a potpourri of music topics, basically. So I have a Travis Barker story from one of my best friends here in my hand that got to interact with him this weekend. Ooh. And you're going to love him even more after we share the story. But let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll throw it to news. And then after the news, we'll open up our Music Vault. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right, you're listening to Sound Sessions here on WGN.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions. We are opening up the Music Vault. Popular segment here. We're going to rifle through a few music topics. What's going on in the world of the music world and and elsewhere.
If you want to join in on the discussion, again, we could be reached at 312-981-7200. You can call or text that number, and you can tweet us at, Michael, what is it?
SoundSeshPod at Twitter.
At SoundSeshPod. Okay, and again, we have Jerry Nunn from nunontherun.com and many other publications.
Yeah, where else can we find you?
Oh, hold on, let me turn your mic on. Go ahead. Oh.
I'm in Windy City Times a lot.
Yeah.
The newspaper, weekly newspaper. So a lot of my interviews are on there. And then I'm on Chicago Pride, who hosts my website. So I'm out running around. I take a lot of photos.
Did I ever tell you my Jerry story from way back when?
No.
You know this story, right?
It's a good story.
It is a really good story. It speaks to the type of guy Jerry is.
You have a
is.
Jerry story.
I have a Jerry story before I even knew who Jerry was.
Yeah.
So, okay, we'll get into it real quickly here.
Yes,
so,
of course.
A long time ago, my buddy had worked at Alpine Valley for some festival they had done, and Liam Gallagher had played there. Liam Gallagher, he's like an Aussie, right? I think he's from Australia.
Liam Finn.
Yeah, Liam Finn. Okay, now I'm running the Gallagher. Yeah, God, I can't
believe it. Wait, any relation to Ben Clemens?
Yes, Ben Clemens is the second cousin twice removed. And anyway, so yes, Liam Finn.
Which is Neil Finn's son from Crowded House.
Okay, see, now it's all coming full circle.
Wow.
Yeah.
But anyways, so my buddy had worked at Alpine Valley and, like, gotten to talking to Liam Finn, and he was playing Lincoln Hall the following night. And Liam had invited me, my buddy, and then a couple extras, giving us a plus ones to get into the show. So I go with my buddy Matt, and we're at the door. We're on the guest list, right? And I'm waiting in line. This is probably, five, maybe even 6 or 7 years ago?
This is a while ago.
It was a while ago.
Oh, wow.
So I'm waiting in line, and my buddy, he's got the guest list thing all set up, and they just gave him one plus one. And so my buddy, looks to me. He's like, sorry. And I'm like,
you're out in the cold.
Out in the cold. I'm kind of
denied.
So I'm like, okay, well, my two friends are going to go into the show and have a great time without me. Great. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? And then all of a sudden, from behind me, I hear, I have a plus one. I'll give it to you. It was Jerry Nunn.
Oh my gosh!
Before I knew him,
I bought him a drink just to say thank you. But that was like the coolest, nicest thing Jerry's ever not ever done. I'm sure you've done kind things.
I didn't know you, and I was just like, I wanted to pay it forward, and I didn't have a plus one, so I was happy to do it.
That's so nice.
And then years later, then you came up to me again at Lollapalooza.
Yeah, and I started noticing him around the halls, and I was like, I don't know if you remember this, but this is a thing that happened, and yeah, pretty neat, huh?
And you got him into a show.
Did I?
I know. No,
sounds like
a show.
Yeah, here we are. And here we are. So.
It's payback time.
It's all full circle.
So speaking of good gestures and the Music Vault and all that, I actually kind of lost my story. I don't know where I put it, but...
Yeah, you were going to talk about the Instagram story. Your friend had a connection with Travis Barker.
Yes. So, speaking of Travis Barker earlier, so this was earlier in the weekend. The Blink-182 did an after show at
ye
the Metro.
Old Blink-182,
which said after show sold out in 11 minutes. My buddy Mike was on like three. This is he was a former bandmate of mine, one of my best friends. He was on a bunch of different computers trying his best to get a hold of a pair of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out. He didn't get any. He found some on Craigslist, and he got scammed.
Oh, man.
So
that's kind of the roll of the dice you take when you get those Craigslist tickets.
So I'm going to read verbatim this post that he posted on Facebook about this event. So I couldn't get tickets to Blink-182 at the Metro. I tried everything to track down a way in, and I could not make it work. I found some tickets online last minute, got to the show with my friend, only to be told they were a fraud. $150 a piece. So they lost $300 total.
Ouch.
In a last-ditch effort, I messaged Travis Barker telling him what happened and my love for the band and he has been a part of. So he sent him a message on Instagram, you know, saying like, I've listened to you for 15 years. You guys are my favorite band ever. I've seen you so many times. I have to be at the shows or anything you could do.
And this is a man who has like 1.2 million Instagram followers.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's one of the most iconic musicians of our generation right now, I think. You know what I mean? I mean, and he's bigger than just Blink-182. He's an icon.
He did so many. He's been in so many groups. He had a hip hop thing going with DJ M
for
a
Transplants.
While.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he continues in his story. Well, he is the man, and I am now standing inside of the Metro about to see my favorite band because of him. This is by far one of the best moments of my life, and I wanted to share it. Much love and respect to Travis. So basically, he shot him a shot in the dark message on Instagram. Hey, wow. This is what happened. Travis Barker pulled some strings and got my buddy into the show because of that.
That's so cool.
How cool is that? That's amazing. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, my gosh. What a cool experience. You get to be on Travis Barker's guest list to go to his own show.
The fact that he's even like monitoring messages that he receives on Instagram, because he's probably receiving thousands, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, at least. And to get into the show, I'm sure that he wasn't the only person who had mentioned that, too.
Right, exactly. So, you know, but just a credit to him, you got to give credit where credit's due. So.
And that's why that band, I think, has such a strong and loyal following because of actions like this. They're the Jerry Nunns of rock bands, I feel like.
Paying it forward, that's always good.
Yeah. Well, to put the yang to the yin, that is Travis Barker, Liam Gallagher.
Yes.
Storms off, I'm sure you guys, probably a lot of people know about this story at this point, but Liam Gallagher storms off stage after 20 minutes into his Lollapalooza set.
Yeah.
So what happened?
I didn't know about that. Okay, well, what bothered me in the first place? Okay, I was invited to the show, but what bothered me is that they called it an after Lala show, and it was on a Wednesday. It was before Lala even started.
Yeah.
So how do you call it after Lala show? Like, that's cashing in on Lollapalooza, right? Isn't it? When it's really before Lollapalooza has even started,
right?
But so that bugged me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they said no plus one, so they made this big thing. No, you cannot bring anyone. You have to come by yourself.
To the show at Liam Gallagher's.
Yeah, so no friends. I mean, you have to, unless you know some press people, I guess, or people at the show. So
stingy.
You have to go solo. And yeah, and so he acted like he had sound problems or something. I heard he was gesturing a lot and saying he had sound and just acting like a baby, basically. Mm-hmm. And then stormed out.
He seems to be a bit of a prima donna. I think he's got a history of this.
I saw him at the venue like a long time ago, which is kind of a weird place. But out in Hammond, and like, you know, that the casino?
Oh, yeah.
He played out there.
I think it's called the Hollywood. No, wait.
Hammond Horseshoe Casino.
That's right, the Horseshoe Casino.
Well, his excuse was, well, he tweeted out after the event, sorry to the people who turned up to the gig in Chicago Lollapalooza. Had a difficult gig last night, which blanked my voice. I'm gutted. Liam Gallagher. So he's saying he had
whatever.
Vocal issues.
I mean, did you watch the movie? Did you guys see the movie? They have a movie about Oasis and how I went and saw it at the Music Box.
Oh, yeah?
And just about how their rise to fame was and then how it, you know, crashed down and everything. It's just...
So this just seems to be another, like, you know, event in a series of events of negative events with the Gallaghers.
This band, it's two brothers,
Four songs. He played four songs and then cut it.
You know, people actually like this band.
No, right. She wanted she was actually gutted too. You could tell she actually felt terrible. She really wanted to make, you know, this is,
she did.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, that would have been an amazing show too. She looks so great on stage and everyone, you know, people are coming from miles and miles away, other states, other countries to go to this festival. Right. You're there to see one of the lead singer of Oasis. That's a rare thing to find, or Lord. Mm-hmm. And then you come all this way and then you get to see 5 minutes of your favorite band. That sucks.
Well, and that's what you like. Speaking about, you know, the East Street guy. Sorry, I'm
like Jake Clemens.
You'll hear later, like, how he feels about his fans, and then Travis. It just shows you what this guy thinks about his fans and what he thinks of himself, I guess.
What does Morrissey think of his fans? Like Morrissey, who cancels all the time,
cancels all. And you know what? He's Riot Fest show, he'd been canceling for years. He made Riot Fest stop selling meat
at
one time.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
They weren't allowed to cook it while he was on
stage. It's so ridiculous.
And did you know what he did? Well, I went to that Riot Fest thing, and he showed videos for like 30 minutes or something, and that was part of his set time. So he didn't have to even sing that long after that.
Like, what kind of videos? I'm picturing like the pita
music videos that he likes. I get a lot of Morrissey stories because I worked at Tower, and
that's weird.
It was all just old music. It was all like old fashioned music videos, like to the set of just random songs.
Yeah.
It was YouTube clips basically that he was playing for 30 minutes, and then he got on stage. Yeah. And
I wonder how much he got paid for that.
Well, when I worked at Tower Records. at the Clark store, they had fans that were waiting for Morrissey. This huge line down the block forever. People waited, you know, for days probably. And he wanted only certain songs played in the store. The store manager was a huge Morrissey fan. He's like, can I just bring him a sandwich for his dinner? And they're like, no. His manager like, no, you cannot. Told the manager no. And then he signed for about 20 minutes. I heard it wasn't even that long. And was out, just left. And all the fans are just devastated.
Huh.
It's just how you need to respect the people that are supporting you.
See, this is it just because you're a successful musician, I'm of the mindset that doesn't put you above. In fact, I think you're more in debt to your fans at that point.
If
you're
absolutely
if you're making millions and you're really successful in the industry, it's because of the people that are investing in your music.
Mm-hmm. And people are mad about Justin Bieber, you know, canceling his tour and stuff. You know, there's that kind of thing too that people. You know, I don't know the real reasons and stuff, but
that's a really good point. And I think that I read an article about Vic Mensa and his reaction to it, because he was supposed to open up for Justin Bieber during that tour.
Oh, he was.
I believe, and now he's stuck. And
why didn't we talk to him about that yesterday?
We should have brought it up to Vic.
Vicky, let me tell me the real story.
How you really
feel? We're really close. Me and Vic are very close now after yesterday in a Red Bull.
You want to hear something crazy? That Vic Mensa, he wasn't even really on the lineup. That was a surprise show that he showed up for.
I didn't even recognize. And somebody was like, and I was like, hey, I went to your listening party.
You guys went up and talked to him?
I did.
Nice.
Everybody was scared too. I was like, no, I'm just going to talk to him. Definitely.
Good for you.
Jerry rolled right up to him, took a selfie with him.
That's awesome.
I was like, this is my one chance. And the next day, he's bigger than life.
Right, I mean, on stage with
him. He's really heading to be really big right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Camille, you have a story about Vic Mensa, right?
Oh.
I do. So in high school, when he was still with Kids These Days, mm-hmm. they tweeted, they were like, oh, if you guys want us to come to your high school after school and like meet us, we'll come. And so we tweeted like Kids These Days to LT and they came. So I have like this random picture of me and some of my high school radio friends with like a pic with Vic Mensa.
Wow.
Yeah. Before in our gym.
Well, in the LT field house. You can.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
No, I know.
I mean, this is like Jay-Z's a supporter of him and all this. So, I mean,
oh, yeah.
This guy's heading up.
Oh, yeah.
And his album's great. I mean, I don't know if you've heard the new
album.
Oh,
it's great. No, it's really good. Great. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. Malia Obama was Ooh. Caught at Lollapalooza again this year.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Sneaky.
She
loves Lollapalooza.
She really does.
She digs it.
She was, let's see here. She was caught during the Killers, their set. She was getting down to the Killers, and she was backstage for most of the set, but came out to the general area to dance later for their set.
Did she have bodyguards and stuff? That's what I want to know.
I would assume. I think at this point she has to.
But even now?
You know what? I actually have a little bit of insider information on Malia coming to Chicago. So my brother, the great Adam.
Right. I met Adam.
You met Adam. Mm-hmm. Kevin, you've met Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He needed to get his phone replaced at the AT&T store yesterday, and guess who was there? Malia Obama and all of her friends.
No kidding.
Yeah, getting new phones. Because supposedly, I guess, I mean, this is just through the grapevine. I don't know if it really happened, but I guess their phones had trouble. They got stolen or something like that, so they needed to replace their phones. And he said that he was looking for some security guards, just one security guard and a group of her friends. But they did travel around in, like, the blacked-out SUV.
Yeah, and if it's one security guard, he's got to be a pretty good security guard.
He most likely can snap your neck.
Probably pretty efficient.
Yeah.
But she was caught dancing, headbanging, and rolling around in the grass. So good for her for having
fun.
That makes me so happy. I'm glad that she's a normal person.
Of course. You know, she's just a kid. Who cares? Should we continue the vault, or should we take a break? What do you think?
Well, let's take a quick break and just roll right into some more stories.
All right, cool. You're listening to Sound Sessions with Jerry Nunn of Nunn on the Run on WGN Radio.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. We got Kevin, we got Mike, and we got Jerry. Guys, I love Blink-182.
I know
I love
you do.
This song.
I know you do.
Lollapalooza has been such a blast. We're in day three. There's one more day.
One more day.
Sunday coming up. Are you guys ready?
I think it's more relaxed on Sunday. I kind of like to chill out a little bit.
For sure.
You have a Bloody Mary. Relax. I'm gonna do some trash pickup tomorrow. Some recycling.
So that's right. Yeah, talk about that.
I've been seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, you guys don't know about the Rock and Recycle program?
No.
Okay. Well, I've been doing it for years. I think this is like my fourth, fifth year of doing it. Where you get a bag from the Rock and Recycle booth. It's a green bag, and you pick up recyclables. You fill it up, and you get a free T-shirt. And this year, they're even doing different colors. I think you can
that's
do
cool.
different writing. And yeah, so it's a lot of It's great to do something like that.
Is it a t-shirt like Captain Planet, like Sile's recycled t-shirt, or is it like a cool Lollapalooza?
No, it's a Lollapalooza. Yeah, this one had like fists pumping or something. And then on the back, it has all the artists. So
that's
it actually
awesome.
Is nice to have.
What a great idea.
I would love to see a girl in a crop top just like with one of those sticks that you pick up the litter with, just like as that one of the t-shirts.
So you're telling you haven't seen that? Because I've seen that. Like only they do it with their hands. Like, do you wear gloves or do they give
that's
gloves?
That's smart. That would be a great thing to bring. I don't know if everyone does. But
sunscreen, trash bag, gloves.
Yeah,
right.
Let's bring them all.
No, but I've seen like girls decked out in their Lollapalooza gear, but you know, and by gear I mean like bikini tops and like short shorts, but then picking up garbage
cans.
Yeah.
Did you want to touch on some of
the
trends?
So I wanted to get into some of the fashion trends that maybe I know I've noticed a few. I don't know about you guys, but
oh yeah,
the biggest trend I've noticed this year.
Drum roll, please.
Glitter.
I was going to say glitter, too.
I have glitter written down right now.
Glitter on
right
everything. I saw a guy with glitter. A glitter. He didn't have an actual beard. He had a glitter beard.
Oh,
it was like pasted onto his face.
Come on.
Yeah.
I was going to put some glitter on. The bedhead people as a Hard Rock had a lot of stuff where they cut my hair.
Yeah. Oh, did they?
And they have
looks
they
great.
Had glitter. Thank you very much. They have glitter downstairs and everything. But I was like, if I wake up tomorrow and have glitter all over my bed.
Oh, I know. You're never going to get it out.
I'm staying at a friend's house. So it's not like I can just, you know. Wash all the sheets with all the glitter. It's going to be everywhere. But yeah, glitter's a big thing. I also like
glitter on the chest too, right?
Yeah, all over the face, like on the cheekbones too, real heavy. They look like what's the word I'm looking for here?
Pixies?
Yes. Oh my God, you read my mind. I'm so happy.
It's in their hair. It's all in their hair and everything.
Yeah.
The man buns is supposed to be gone though, right? Is it?
Yeah, I'm still seeing it a little bit.
A little bit.
I think it's going. I think it's out the window.
That trend's kind of gone, right?
I hope so.
That's what they told me at the point.
I've been seeing just more of the sloppy man bun rather than the undercut. You know, with like the shaved sides.
Yeah.
And you whip it on back.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that's going away.
Okay, that's gone.
I noticed a lot of jerseys, surprisingly like hockey sweaters. I noticed a good handful of those.
Ooh,
hockey sweater. I thought there would be more onesies, and there just wasn't as many onesies
as
I thought.
We saw two of them. We saw two. Yeah, I'd expect more, too.
I thought a lot.
The weather really lends itself to it, I think. It's not overly hot. It's perfect festival weather and onesie weather.
It always perfect onesie weather. You know what I've been I looked for a little bit? The costumes. There weren't as many costumes this year.
No.
That has something to do with the EDM thing, I think. Like,
you
know, whenever they had like Deadmau5 or whatever, like that was the big thing. Everyone had like,
oh,
remember back years ago when I'm going to say it right, Deadmau5, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where they had like the big head, everyone had those head things on.
Yeah.
So people would dress up, or Gaga. When Gaga was here, that was like the gay year. I mean, there was so much just gay, bright stuff, you know, so that really affected it. So I think it's who is here.
I'm sure of that. Yeah,
it
that
has
really
a lot
makes sense.
Effect of, you know, what people dress and what they wear and the tone and the fans.
So is there like a glitter monster or something that's going to be playing on Sunday? Or like,
you haven't heard, Glitter Bomb? They're great.
Glitter Bomb. I've been seeing a lot of Boy Scout uniforms. I saw a few of those.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I've actually noticed a downgrade a bit, and I think this is a good thing. In the amount of butt cheeks I've seen.
I
saw
compared to
today.
Last year.
Downgraded butt cheeks.
I've still seen some, but last year it was like everywhere.
Yeah. The underbutt is alive.
For better or for worse. They were,
You know, call us, text us, 312-981-7200. What kind of things have you been noticing around the city, or if you've been watching online or following it, or just trends in general with music? What have you been seeing? Because it's a really interesting thing. It's cool to see people express themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I do think it's kind of funny, though, at the same time. There seems to be a bit of, like, a costume every year. Like, you got to have your festival costume.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, me yesterday, I was, wearing normal clothes, and then I had my dad's shoes on.
That's true.
That's a festival hack. You have to have good shoes, or else you're going to regret it.
Yeah, so, or switch out the shoes. Don't have the same shoes every day, or you're going to wear your feet out.
Right.
Good point.
But they're going to be muddy.
For
like
sure.
When it rains and everything.
Get some, you could get some orthopedic slip-ins. That's what I've been using lately.
Okay, great. Grandpa. What are you talking about? Are you that broke down that you have to have some inserts into your
very,
shoes?
Very, very comfy.
Oh, my
shout out
gosh.
To Dr. Schultz.
I don't want your arches to fall at Lollapalooza. That would be traumatic.
But really.
Yeah, but really, you should get some insoles. I mean, they're key. They're key.
God, I thought I was the grandpa of Lollapalooza.
Papapalooza, the official name. Oh, man, it's been a really great time. I think we're getting some calls here, which is fantastic. Let's take those in a second.
Yeah.
It looks like we've got our good friend Tyrone from Galena. Tyrone, what's going on, man? Welcome to Sound Sessions.
I accidentally just dropped
him. Bye, Tyrone.
That's my mistake.
call us back.
Call back,
man.
Tyrone.
Call back. We want to hear from you. So, sweet. You know, we're kind of neglecting to talk about the amount of after shows that are happening here in the city.
Yes, and I think Jerry, you both can speak to that quite a bit.
There was a lot. Mm-hmm. They're every night, and we could say what Milky Chance was tonight at House of Blues. I mean, they're at every venue. Banks did one.
Yep.
There's been a lot of talk about the Foo Fighters. I know you wanted to talk
about that. How about that Foo Fighters show? I was not there myself. I would have loved to go. Tickets were nearly impossible to get. I wish I would have had a connection or something to Dave Grohl. But they ended up playing 3 hours, 32 song set. That is unspeakable. Heck?
That's crazy.
32 songs.
Oh my gosh! And I guess I was talking to a few people at the after show after party we were just at, and I guess they were playing so many songs they played through the entire set list for the Foo Fighters, and they go, "You guys want some more? All right!" And they just started playing covers of AC/DC and other bands.
That's so cool. It's very cool. Well, and this kind of goes hand in hand with another item that I had in the Music Vault: the fact that on the upcoming Foo Fighters album, Sir Paul himself plays drums on a track.
Wow.
Nice.
How cool is that? I didn't even know the guy played drums.
Yeah, wait a minute. He's bass and piano.
He does everything, apparently.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, yeah, on one of the tracks, he came in. Apparently, him and Dave Grohl are, you know, lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and I think it was like in the second take he nailed it or something like that.
Of course he did.
I know, right? This guy. But we are getting some calls here. Should we go? Let's go to Tyrone again.
Yeah, Tyrone, what's going on, man? Welcome to Sound Sessions.
Okay, I just wanted to make a short comment here.
Sure.
To this day, I still can't believe that it must have been around 94 or 95 that they had Lola Palooza in Pecatonica, Illinois. Can you believe that?
That was back when I was touring.
Pecatonica? Oh, really? Is that what you said?
Where is this?
Pecatonica.
Is that a real town?
Sounds Native American.
It's pronounced Pecatalika in Indian, and then they changed it to Pecatonica. But I could never get over how could they steal that from Chicago and have it in Pecatonica, Illinois, back in 94, 95, whichever one of them 2 years it was. I can't get over that.
Wow.
Man, Lollapalooza alive and well all over the place. Tyrone, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
You take care. All right, we got thank you. We got caller Ben, who is going to be talking a little bit about the Chicago Athletic Club. There's an after party that everyone's been trying to go to. Ben, how was it?
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good. Oh, Ben. Ben, could you give us – this is my buddy Ben. Could you give us an update on what's going down at the Chicago Athletic Club tonight?
Yeah, man. We were at that Flood magazine event. It was pretty sweet. Thanks for sending us over there.
Sweet,
Floodfest. I heard about this. Yeah.
And so, what was it? Who was playing? What'd you experience? Any free stuff you got?
It was a little Alt J on DJ.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty good time. Free drinks, can't go wrong.
Certainly.
Right on. Did you guys behave yourself?
Yeah, we stayed out of trouble.
Ben, thank you so much for calling the show. It's good to hear from you. And are you going to be at the last day of Lollapalooza? What are you looking forward to for the rest of the show?
I'm not going to go to the last day, but I think we might try to hit an after party at the Hard Rock Hotel afterwards.
There you go. Sounds great.
So many after parties.
Yeah, I like the Soho House. Tomorrow they're doing Charlie XCX is doing a little barbecue there.
Oh yeah, what's there tomorrow?
Charlie XCX. She's like a pop singer. Oh. Yeah, she's going to be there tomorrow DJing. A lot of DJs there.
Man, so much stuff happening. Well, Ben, thanks for the call. Stay safe and good hearing from you, my friend.
All right. Love you, man. Peace.
See you later.
Well, you heard the tone. Let's get up to the newsroom. What do you think?
Yes. You want to?
Sure.
We have one more quick call. Let's take this. Our good friend of the show, as people might know, Kevin is the producer of Bill and Wendy. I'm the producer, Patty Vasquez, and we have Patty Vasquez regular, Mr. Paul Favre, our djembe player himself. Paul, how's it going?
Hey, man. How's it going? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. What did you end up doing tonight?
Well, after I saw you, I went and watched Chance the Rapper, and I went a little for Cascade, but I stuck around mostly for. It was amazing.
What did you think of both of those acts?
I thought Chance was amazing. I had never seen him live before, and clearly, like, there's a reason why he's getting all the recognition he gets.
Yeah.
He put on a great show. There were fireworks. And the guy he did that song with, the dance, Can I Take This Dance, he came up and played as a surprise guest, too.
Was it Vic Mensa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Vic Mensa. It was another guy from another country.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah, we kind of left a little early.
Yeah.
We missed it a little bit. Hey, Paul, you know, Paul has a great music connection. He's with Shoeshine Boy Productions, an amazing artist all over the city. So you have a lot of insight into, you know, up-and-coming artists. Who are some of your sleeper hits that you saw at Lollapalooza?
I really liked, I don't remember any of the names. let's see. Let me think about it. Russ was pretty good. I liked Alice in Wonderland. That was pretty cool to watch. Well, that. That was it. You know, today was the only day I've gone. Tomorrow, you know, I really wanted to see Whitney, but they were there Friday. And I was really bummed that I thought they were, I was going to see them today. In fact, I think I told you, I go meet at the Whitney stage.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wait, they played the day before.
It's hard to keep up that schedule. That schedule is crazy. Yeah, it's hard to keep up with all that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're from Chicago, too, and I heard they had a really good show. And tomorrow I want to see Car Seat Headrest.
They're at
3 o'clock, I think. They're going to be awesome. Man. I think. I don't know. I've never seen them either.
You know, one other sleeper hit that you mentioned, Foghorn Chicken or Leghorn Chicken.
Leghorn Chicken. Wasn't that good?
That was super good. That was a great spicy chicken sandwich.
Yeah, it's, I was very happy with my meal there for sure. So
the food is great.
There's a lot of good food there.
Yeah, they had a lot. Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong there. In fact, like that's like the sleeper hit is the food there.
Yeah, right.
People forget that, you know, there's so many different restaurants trying so hard to get in on that.
Yeah.
And they do such a good job of picking who gets to do that.
And it wasn't that expensive. I mean, it was like $9 for most items.
Yeah.
Like that, $8.
Yeah. So. 100%. It was, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Are you guys going tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll be there, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
But we got to get up to the newsroom. Thank you for calling in, though, Paul. Appreciate it.
Yeah, get to the news. And then also I want to just say Ryan Adams was amazing, too. I saw the after party. Best show ever.
That's and Ron was there, too. So, hey, Paul, thank you so much for calling into the show. I will see you tomorrow.
You got it.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. My name is Kevin.
And this is Michael.
And we are absolutely thrilled to be joined by our friend Jerry Nunn of nunontherun.com. And was it Windy City Times?
Yes.
And many other things. You're a busy guy.
I am. It's been crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
We were talking about how dead we're going to be after.
I know.
Like tomorrow, I don't know. Monday's going to be rough at the Tribune. I'll be at the, you know, upstairs.
Yeah, back to reality.
Back to work. Oh,
yeah.
I don't want to think about that.
It's going to be rough.
Well, after our next break, we're going to air our interview with Yukimi of Little Dragon. But for now, we just wanted to kind of close off our coverage and say thank you again to Jerry Nunn of nunontherun.com.
Thanks for having me.
Check it out, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So can we, I guess, you know, to close things off, what's your absolute highlight? What would you have done differently? I mean, what's your overall critiques of the fest so far, guys?
The fest is fantastic. It's always so busy and, you know, you get this crazy phenomenon called FOMO, most of the time. And FOMO, of course,
you don't.
Means you don't. Well, you
I
mastered
don't.
The FOMO.
I just don't. I don't get it.
What does FOMO stand for?
Fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out.
And, I don't have it.
And Kevin has squashed that. And that's what I would love to do because I'm looking at the social media posts and making my own. I'm getting my own FOMO for my own self. And there's just so many things going on. So I'd have to say what I would do different next year is I would you know, kind of pace myself a little bit better. Because we were talking a little bit.
Good luck with that.
about you know, some of the libations and festivities that you can get while you're on the field. And I feel like, you know, if I would have ate a little bit better today to eat, I had that spicy chicken sandwich and a Kuma's hamburger all within 20 minutes.
Oh my god!
Oh.
Not really good if you want to keep your stamina up.
Yeah.
So I would organize it a little bit better. What about you guys?
There is that fear of missing out with, like, the celebrities are everywhere. So for me, who likes, you know, to meet celebrities and pictures and I'll never probably have that moment again, there was bands everywhere and it was really hard to tell who's famous and who's not. And, you know, who's a big deal.
Totally. They kind of all blend together.
They walk around and you just don't, because we're back there doing interviews and some people don't know who I'm talking to, but I'm like, this person's a big deal, but they don't know, you know, because
yesterday you and I were talking and then in comes Run the Jewels, walks right past us, and I'm having an inner freak out because I love Run the Jewels.
Whoa. Yeah.
And I was
I'm like, who's that guy?
Yeah, they just got whisked away right away, but I was like, oh my God, that was just, you know, Killer Mike.
I mean, they walked through Caged Elephant, like just walked through. I mean, they're probably going to be headlining soon.
Oh yeah.
That's what we're thinking.
You know, that band, that was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Really?
When he came out, I mean, one, they're slowly collecting an assortment of hits too, and he went out into the middle of the crowd and
sang. He's like Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
He is the new Mick Jagger.
Super cool.
Yeah, so stuff like that, you know, there's all these great people. You know, Zara Larsson, who's like, you know, this really young 18-year-old. There's a lot of 18-year-olds that are coming up big. I mean, Lorde just turned 18.
She's only 18?
Doesn't it make you feel kind of like silly?
Yeah, what have I accomplished? I was 18.
right.
Yeah.
I only had my license. That was the biggest accomplishment.
Right.
This new kid I interviewed, his name's Declan McKenna. He's new, but he's on like major label and he's 18.
Wow.
And these kids are doing, he wrote a trans song about trans people. Like who
does that
at 18?
That's great.
Lollapalooza's tagline, I just thought of it's brilliant. Come see the kids play. Because they're children.
That's good. You should get paid for that.
I know.
Trademark.
It's turning into Kids of Palooza.
Yeah, right.
Literally.
But for me, I don't know that I would do too much. Like you said, pacing yourself. Yep, I could have done that yesterday for sure.
But why? I mean, you only get to experience it once.
You're having fun. Man, I think maybe, I know this is a tough task, but some of the facilities were pretty rough. I don't know if you guys noticed that at all.
What? How so?
What are you talking about?
The outhouses.
Oh, I don't go to those.
I know. Like,
do not.
We get lucky because we get like the certain designated ones. But I went to the common general area, and some of them were pretty bad.
Oh no!
Oh man, you can hold it for those air conditioned places that they have.
I mean, we could do a whole show about the grossness that's in
but
the park.
Tune in to Sound Sessions next week for an all new.
There's only so much you can do, but otherwise, you know, they know what they're doing. It's a well oiled machine, Lollapalooza.
Mm-hmm. So and I hope it keeps coming back, and I hope that. Man, 4 days is a lot, but I think that we can tackle it next year, guys. Yeah. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us here tonight. This was fantastic.
NoneOnTheRun.com. Anything else? Who are you putting out first? What do you got coming up on None on the Run?
I got to write all these interviews that I did.
The work never ends.
Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 a day, so I'm going to be writing these till Christmas.
Where will you be tomorrow?
Tomorrow, I got to do some more interviews. There's a group called Sophie Tucker.
Okay.
Who I love. They're really fun. They were up for a Grammy. So I'm interviewing them.
S-O-F-I?
S-O-F-I. Okay. Yeah. Do you know? Yeah. She sings in Portuguese.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing some interviews and running around, picking up trash, and
picking up trash.
The end of my day, my weekend. So I'm ready for it to end.
Jerry, you are a one-man wrecking machine. We can't thank you enough for joining us here on Sound Sessions.
Thank you.
This is so great.
All right, we'll wrap it up. We'll go to break here. And again, coming back, we will have our interview with Little Dragon next here on WGN Radio.
Hey, this is Yukimi from Little Dragon, and you're listening to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio.
Welcome to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. I am here at Lollapalooza, and I am very thrilled to be joined by Yukimi Nagano. Am I saying that correct?
Yes, correct.
Of Little Dragon, the great, I guess we'll call you guys Indie Electro, Soul, something along those lines.
Sure, yeah, whatever you want to call it.
All right, excellent. So I guess first and foremost, you guys have a new album out, Season High, correct?
Yeah.
So how is this album separating itself from previous works in the Little Dragon discography?
Well, I think for this album, we kind of returned back a little bit to our philosophy that we had with our first album. We just really tried to be super playful and experimental in the studio. And, I think not think too much about outside factors. You know, we just, you know, any pressure from label or management or anybody in the business, we're just like, now we're just turning that off, and we're completely, you know, creativity first on all levels, yeah.
Very cool. So I see you guys are either starting or on an international tour, like 50 dates or something like that. How's that going so far, and where are you guys going? You're going all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place, actually. Yeah, no, we're doing this tour in the States now. We're Gonna end it on Outside Lands in San Francisco, and then we're doing like a week in New York City, Terminal 5, Apollo Theater, and PS1, and then we're doing a tour in Europe, and yeah, and so on. Yeah, it goes on.
I have to ask, because you don't have a very strong accent. Are you living stateside now, or are you just so used to communicating with people in the States, or where's the accent going?
I'm actually half American. My mom's American, so English is my first language, but I'm born in Sweden with a Japanese dad, yeah, so...
Great. So I know you guys had an after show last night at Concord, and then a DJ set at Berlin. How'd those go? How was the turnout?
It was good. The show was amazing. I mean, I was a bit, you know, it was definitely a late show. So you kind of never know what the vibe is going to be like. But people were really up for it. It was a party vibe.
Yeah. I think, you know, with some of the shows getting rained out last night, do you think there was an extra added excitement so they can come and see you? Did you feel extra energy, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It must have sort of pushed people to come and do something. Yeah, it was a vibe for sure. Yeah.
Before you and I got started, off the mic, I was mentioning a show that I saw, Apparat at the Lincoln Hall, probably 5 years ago, and I swear Little Dragon did an after show. How did that come about? Do you guys know Apparat well, or are you guys buddies? How did that come about?
No, we're not buddies, but yeah, it just happened. I don't remember.
So did the Lincoln Hall ask you guys, or you just were in town? I mean, how did that work? if you remember.
I don't remember.
That's fine. That's totally acceptable. Well, it seems like you guys are around quite a bit. I mean, I feel like I've seen you in Chicago a few times before. Do you guys have a special place in your heart for Chicago? I mean, you were just talking about deep dish pizza. How do you feel about the city of Chicago?
No, I love Chicago. I mean, we've been here a lot, like ever since we started touring in the States, you know, driving around the country in a little van. Yeah. We always made sure to come to Chicago, and we've always felt support. Even just playing yesterday was like a reminder of like how Chicago is one of those places that really shows up for us and supports us and, you know, loves the music. And yeah, I mean, sometimes I have this feeling like, you know, our music is a bit weird and a bit out there, and like, and then you come to the States and you come to places like Chicago and you're like, okay, you know, I feel accepted here, you know?
You guys definitely are.
Yeah.
When you come to Chicago, are there any like spots you need to hit, whether it be food or like a music shop or anything like that?
I think it's just the city has an energy to it, you know? Like, I feel like other cities in the States, you know, New York City or San Francisco, or just it has a vibe. It has its own unique energy. So yeah, I usually just take a walk around, you know, the river, or just
Very cool. So I know you guys have been together since high school. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've been friends since high school. Yeah,
that's crazy. And so you've been playing since, I read, 96. Maybe I'm wrong there, but that's a long time. That's coming up on what, like 20 years? It's 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I met Eric when I was like 14, just turned 14. So. We just started hanging out. Like, we were just music nerds, and we'd play each other records, and you know, everyone was really passionate about their instrument and what they were doing, but we didn't know at the time that we were going to end up being a band, you know, sort of spending the next 20 years, whatever, together. Right. So.
Well, talk about that. When you're touring, you guys are in a tiny van sometimes, and you're crammed together, and you guys have been making music for so long. How do you keep one from killing each other in the van, and two, how do you keep the creative juices flowing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, definitely we have our challenges, you know. We do really, I guess like any relationship, you know, like ask a couple who's been together for 50 years or whatever, you know, they're not going to say that even the best relationships have their challenges. So, yeah, we try to just, I guess, make sure to be fair and respect each other. And, you know, we share all the money. That definitely helps, you know. It's a simple thing, but I think a lot of bands kind of, break because of that.
Yep. Well, you just brought up a really good point to me, something, because I'm a musician as well, not quite to the level where I'm touring across country or anything, but, you know, there's something to be said about the relationship. It really is like a relationship, because I feel like you come in sometimes and you meet with a guy or a gal and you try jamming, and it's just not gelling for whatever reason.
Right.
Then there's others that you just instantly hit it off with.
Right.
What can you say about that? What is, I mean, there's a certain energy with some people you just click with, it seems, you know?
Yeah. I think, to be just sort of paying attention to that energy, you know, giving it, validating it, you know, and really exploring it more and taking it somewhere. And then, you know, if it does change, because every relationship is going to change somehow, you know, you just sort of have to, like, be like, okay, you know. I feel sometimes like when you grow up, people are like, think that everything's supposed to be set, like you're not supposed to have any, like you fail if you have challenges almost, or if you make mistakes, or, you know, and I think just, you know, like anything, you got to make a bunch of mistakes and evolve together somehow.
For sure. Well put. I want to get into, I feel like a lot of Americans, maybe not just Americans, but a lot of people I know, that when they think of music in Sweden, they're thinking like Sweden metal, right? The black metal, the heavy metal. But then there's bands like Jose Gonzalez, there's Junip, there's Fever Ray, there's yourselves and The Knife. Can you talk a little bit to the music scene? I know this is kind of an encompassing broad question, but the music scene in Sweden seems to be a really healthy, thriving one in almost every genre.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I guess Sweden is the biggest music export after America and UK. Yeah. I think it's, we really value, you know, music and culture in, sure, Sweden, and you know, we have really good music schools that are for everybody, you know. We pay a lot of taxes for good stuff, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I think ever since, like, Sweden has always copied music, you know. Yeah. In the 60s, there were, like, 10 Swedish bands who sound just like the Beatles, sure, or looked up to a lot of English and American bands, yeah, and sort of copied that. But if you go back even further, like, you know, Swedish folk music is very melodic, and we have a really strong music culture, I guess, yeah, that's just kept on.
Yeah, really cool. So when you're playing a festival like Lollapalooza, as big and as busy as it is, I know you guys are carting around doing these interviews and such, do you get to enjoy the fest at all?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. As long as you get those just moments to, you know, take it all in.
Sure. Yeah. Well, what about, like, can you go and see a certain artist after you guys play or before you guys play if you're so inclined?
Definitely, yeah. I always try to check out bands. Sometimes, unfortunately, you know, I don't have time for it. But.
Sure. Is there any, I don't want to put you on the spot, anybody on your list that you're trying to see?
Okay, I'm going to be super honest. I actually haven't looked at the schedule yet.
That's okay. You got to take care of your business first. I get that. So I noticed, looking through your guys' Twitter and Instagram, I'm seeing some creative merchandise coming out from the Little Dragon World, such as little candies. I'm seeing rolling papers and things like that. Who's coming up with these, like, really cool ideas?
I mean, we just think, we try to be silly with it, sure, you know, like for the last album, Nabuma Rubber Band, we made some Nabuma rubber, some condoms and stuff, and a mixtape with some slow jams to it. Yeah, no, we just try to be silly and have fun with it. Yeah.
So I'd like to know, what was your first album that really struck you? And then also, what was the first concert you ever attended yourself?
First album that I listened to.
One that really, like, spoke to you.
Well, there have been a lot. But the one that comes to mind, I guess, is Sign of the Times by Prince. Is an album from beginning to end that I really just listened to so much.
Sure.
And
I think you can hear that in your music a little bit. There's a little Prince vibe there. What about today's music? Do you have any guilty pleasures that you maybe somebody you don't want to admit that you like?
I don't know. No, not really. I mean, like, I like a lot of, you know, weird experimental music, but I also like super commercial music. Like, I don't know, freaking love the song with the Pharrell and Katy Perry and Calvin, whatever his name. Yeah. That's like such a cute poppy, sure, track, you, sure, know, like, so yeah, I'm open to everything. Cool. Yeah.
What about, like, anybody coming up in the scene that you're really pumped about right now?
Well, we have a neighbor, a studio neighbor, called Sir Was, okay, SIRWAS, and he's kind of got a dreamy sort of experimental vibe to him. There's also a guy called Ross from Friends.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we've been listening to him like crazy. I think he's cool. British. I'm not sure, but it's kind of house music that's really good.
Cool. Is there any, I guess, cliches or trends in music today that you just have had your fill with, whether it be, you know, autocorrect or whatever?
I mean, we tend to, like, copy a lot of stuff, but always do it, like, like unprofessionally in a way. So it always sounds rubbish when we try to make like the kind of standard copy stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I'd say no rules, you know, like when it comes to making music. But of course, you know, it's taste. You know, if you want to do stuff that everybody else is doing, that's fine. But it's obviously gonna be a little bit uninteresting unless you're doing it super slick, I guess. Sure.
Going back to the early days of Little Dragon, what was it like the original vision for the band? And do you think you kind of met that vision or surpassed or not quite hit it? Like, where did, you know what I mean?
I think we've met the vision. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
No, I mean, the first sort of big goal was just to live on music. And we're doing that, you know.
That's a tough thing to do.
It's tough. You know, I'm still, to this day, I know so many people at home that I love and respect and who make great art and who aren't doing that. So it's a reminder for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's about how you define success. You know what I mean? Like for me, success is just to be able to have creative freedom. It's not necessarily being top of the charts. Sure. You know.
That's well put. Have you seen anything on the internet, whether it be Wikipedia or just anything in a Google search about yourself or Little Dragon that you just see and you go, "What? That's totally false."
Yeah, I mean, little things. I know I read that my mom's Swedish, my mom's American, you know. That's everyone. Just, you know, but I don't pay too much attention
sure.
to it.
As you shouldn't. You know, I won't keep you much longer. I just want to know, you guys are here at Lollapalooza. You got a new album out. You got this, you know, your international tour. What's next for Little Dragon?
Next is definitely, I mean, on a personal level, it's going back into the studio and starting to write and being excited about, you know, making new music. Yeah.
Well, Yukimi, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us on SoundCloud.
Hey, this is Jake Clemens, and you're listening to Sound Sessions. Oh, Janine.
Hey, welcome to Sound Sessions. This is Michael.
And this is Kevin.
And Kev, you know, there is one band that has just solidified itself in American pop culture,
totally.
American music, and that is Bruce Springsteen, E Street Band.
That's right.
And we have with us today Jake Clemens, who is the saxophone player for this band. And what a year this man has had. Not only is he one of the most talented saxophone musicians, and, I mean, he plays so much already. He's put out a new music video. He has this great tour. I don't even know how he keeps up with himself. He's so busy. What's going on, Jake? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. So you're playing at the City Winery here in Chicago on August 8th. And, you know, you kind of undertook the chance to be a saxophone player in Bruce Springsteen's band very recently. What was it like getting that call up to the major leagues like that?
You know, it was a pretty intense time, you know. Clarence and I were really, really close. So after he passed away, man, a bit of a heart-wrenching, just, I don't know, really, really difficult time. So, you know, it was a nice progressive period after that where Bruce and I were getting together and having that, and, you know, kind of happened in a natural way, I'd say, wow. Overall. But, you know, I experienced a lot of healing from playing after Clarence had passed and a certain amount of connection with him that was really, I don't know, miraculous almost.
Yeah.
And that healing was something that, you know, became important to me to share with everyone else. So it happened in a really natural way, and you know, there's no sense of I don't know, rock stardom to it at all. It was just a something that needed to be done, I guess, and something that I'm grateful for.
So Jake, for those who don't know, your uncle Clarence was in the band, the E Street Band, before you, and then when he passed away, you kind of took over that role. Now, would you say that your uncle had an influence on you picking up the saxophone in the first place?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very familiar with, you know, different instruments. I grew up in a very musical household. But it wasn't until I saw E Street play and watched Clarence walk on that stage that I had a distinct interest in the saxophone itself. So, yeah, very largely had to do with him.
That's great. So when you're going on tour and everything, you know, it's hard to stay focused, especially with such a enormous band. I mean, every night is a sold out show and everything. But I want to know, what do you do to unwind when you kind of need to veg out after all that explosive sound and you're seeing the crowd and everything? What does Jake Clemons do to just relax?
Gosh, you know, I guess there's an ebb and flow with that. I try not to relax too much. It's, you know, because you're going to be getting up and doing the next thing the next night or the night after. So when I'm on tour, it's pretty rigorous, but it's pretty, I enjoy that. You know, there's a certain intensity that makes it fun. But, yeah, at the end of the night, it's after you've played for 3 to 4 hours and put everything on the table, you're pretty exhausted overall. And I don't know, sometimes I'll go for a walk, you know, just a solo by myself, just checking out the city or you know, read, listen to podcasts.
Nice.
What kind of podcasts are you listening to these days? Because we find a lot of musicians actually do that because they play music and it's such ingrained in their self and what they do day to day that they take some time away from it and just like to listen to spoken word. So what are some good ones we can check out?
I guess I listen to pretty typical ones, probably, you know, like This American Life.
Yeah.
The Stuff You Missed in History Class. Oh, I really enjoy.
It's a good one.
I don't know. You know, there's a Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm a big fan of Radiolab.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I kind of want to get into, so again, you're going to be at the City Winery here, your solo project, just Jake Clemons, on the 8th, coming up very soon here. Well, so what can people and fans expect at a Jake Clemons show compared to what they can expect at a Bruce and the E Street Band show?
I'd say it's obviously going to be different music.
Right, yeah, right? That's the point.
But the overall tone of the show is really similar. You know, I mean, I grew up in that camp. I grew up watching that play and being so familiar with, I don't know, like what they are about as a band. And when I stepped into the role that I stepped into, you know, it became a really intense observation and understanding how to craft a show and what a show is about. And, you know, what the starting focus might be and what the end focus might be. Yeah. So it's a very similar sense to it. For me, when I first saw the band play, it was the first time hearing rock and roll. I grew up in a really conservative house.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I'd never heard anything like that before.
Wow.
I grew up on, like, marching band music. My dad was a band director for the Marine Corps.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So it was, you know, marching band music and gospel and classical music, and that was about it. So, yeah, it blew my mind to hear that sound. But in all honesty, at that moment, it wasn't the music that grabbed me as much as the sense in the room. You know, being able to look around and realize that everyone was leaning into the same moment.
Yeah.
From the stage throughout the arena. And I don't know, something that really compelled me. And that's the same thing that I live for today. You know, playing a show, that's the moment I'm looking for. And whether it's with E Street or myself. So when my band's on stage, there is that similar aspect of I want the room to feel connected and I want to feel like something's happening beyond the music, that there's a feeling that's developing throughout the night.
Wow, that's really well put and enticing, I can say. I want to know... The E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen, and, you know, there are a few projects or a few bands out there that really know no generation and know no mm-hmm. time. They just exist and are well-loved generation after generation. And, you know, the E Street Band with Bruce is certainly one of those bands. Why is that? I mean, how do you achieve something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if I know the answer specifically. I would say that there is an element of that band's performance that is not genre specific, and I think yeah. that might be a big part of it. You know, it can cover a lot of different territory.
Sure.
But beyond that, it's not just the music. You know, most people will say they listen to an E Street record or a Bruce record, and that they may not love it. But I have yet to find someone who goes to a live show and walks away without you know, having a serious connection to the band. And there's something in that element of the live experience that I think makes it unique. The fact that it's being sculpted live, you know, that there's something in that moment that is specific to that moment, you know, that, that each night is its own night, and it's molded in front of you, and you're a part of it, you know. I think that is a sense of, I don't know, like who we are as humans that's maybe been around for forever, that we've lost touch with in some ways in the last, I don't know, 60 or 70 years. It used to be that live performance was something that happened, you know, acoustically. So you had to be close to it and you had to feel it. You know, there is a tangible sense to music. It told our stories. It you know, carried our culture, and the news was often conveyed, you know, through music. So I don't know. There's so much that I think is, I don't want to say lost, but not everyone carries that same torch. You know, once music became largely commercialized, I feel like it kind of started to, I don't know, lose that essence. So I think E Street's been really, really good about connecting to that same core and that same heartbeat, and that's what makes them stand out, I'd say.
Your answer was so sincere, and I could tell that you're just an old soul when it comes to music, which I can really connect to, and I'm sure our listeners can as well. Again, this is Jake Clemons. He's going to be playing August 8th at the City Winery. Now, Jake, I want to take it in a little tiny bit of a different direction. You're talking about, you know, I love the fact that you mentioned that music once came acoustically, because, you know, you'd be watching orchestras and they'd be playing these grand symphonies and everything, and that's where music kind of got its birth from. But I kind of want to know more about the fact that Bruce and you guys play four-hour shows sometimes. What are the practices like where you can build up that kind of stamina to be on stage for so long? I mean, I think that he holds the record for the longest show of all time, right?
That's true.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about if he has a record or not. But I mean, they're epics. You know, they're certainly epics, and it's not something that you necessarily train for. I mean, it's such a, I don't know. I mean, dare I say, like, spiritual experience that you know, time doesn't exist there. There's not a matter of like stamina that's developed. Like, there's some nights that we play for 2.5 hours, and it feels like you know, 3 hours. So it all just depends on the evening. But I mean, I guess like it all goes back to that sincerity that allows it to happen that way, and more so I have to give it to the fans, man. A 4 hour show is one thing, but so many of those fans are getting there 3 hours early, 4 hours early, sometimes days early, and they're standing there and they're like not moving, they're standing in place. And that kind of commitment is something that, you know, you have to honor, you know.
For sure.
It's really remarkable.
I think that's what, Kevin, tell me if I'm wrong here, but that speaks to why a band can have so much longevity is the fact that these people, the musicians that they're watching actually are thankful to them.
Yeah.
It's such a genuine feeling.
Absolutely.
I really like that. So, Jake, when you're playing with these bands, it's kind of a step up from, you know, you're a classically trained musician, and then you're on stage with one of the greatest living legends of all time. What have the fan experiences been like? What's some of the best moments that you've had playing with the E Street Band where you're like, holy smokes, I have made it. You know, I'm hanging out with the president right now. Can you give us some of those kind of stories?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly don't feel like I've made it, you know, that's, hopefully I'm a long way from there. I don't know. I mean, there's always a feeling of, just being in a room and seeing, you know, people being captivated and caught up in the moment that you're also caught up in. You know, I don't live like an extravagant life, so there's not like a, you know, well, I get out on my yacht and, you know, just, in other words, I don't have a yacht. Is the point there? It's clear. I don't know, man. You know, there's absolutely moments where I had to pinch myself and go like, "Oh my god!" Like, I was just on stage with Paul McCartney,
Bruce
Springsteen, and as like as human of a moment as it seems in that moment, it's afterwards where I go like, "What just happened? That, was that real? Like, you know, and I'm grateful to have those moments kind of speckled throughout my career as a whole, you know. But, yeah, it's really interesting, you know, and you find yourself, like, sitting on a couch in a bar in Australia chatting with, you know, I don't know, people that you really respect and look up to from all kinds of different genres, and then saying to yourself, like, I can't believe I'm actually a part of this conversation, you know?
Yeah.
I know there's a moment that stands out, speaking to specifically, where I'm sitting with Tom Morello and Eddie Vedder and Glenn Hansard and Bruce and Steven. And, you know, it's kind of stupefying.
Right. And like, that's
how am I in this realm?
Well, but you actually put the work to get into that room.
Right.
Like, it's not just coming from anybody, like anybody on the street. You took the time to you know, put those hours alone, like practicing, and it's finally come to be. What a good feeling! I like that a lot.
Well, I'm constantly grateful. It's and it's an easy thing to be reminded of how grateful I should be. You know, it's a pretty cool thing.
Jake, you said something that struck me when we asked you that last question. You said you don't think you've made it yet. With that said, in your mind, what is success then? In your world and in your mind and in your path, what is success for you? Because it's different for everybody, it seems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe success in some ways is to not starve and stay hungry.
Ooh, I like that.
Wow.
No.
And that, you know, speaking of Tom Morello, that goes back to the Rage lyric, hungry people don't stay hungry for long. I like that, though. That's really well played there.
Yeah.
Not starve.
You know, I mean, Bruce did something to me when I had first started in that role, a tour back in 2012. I think it was like the second show, and he said, listen, it's important you understand you haven't earned it. You haven't earned it. And you're not going to earn it. Like, every night you're earning it.
Right.
Every night you step on that stage, you have to earn it. You have to work as though you're earning it every night. And for him to say that after 40 years, he's still doing that really gave me some really incredible perspective on life in general, you know,
yeah.
And the fact that, again, take it back to those fans, like, to look out in the room and see, a woman sitting in the furthest reach of the room, whether it's a stadium or a club, or a guy who's like, you know, having a beer, like to know that for each of those people, they went through lengths to get there. You know, they sacrificed certain hours at work, you know, the money that they made from those hours of work just to get a ticket, and then let alone they have kids, you know, they have to have a babysitter and they have to, like, find a way to get there. And,
yeah.
You know, the sacrifices that they make on a nightly basis is remarkable. And, you know, like, as an artist, as somebody who's there, like, I have to earn that, you know, I have to hopefully make it worth their expense, you know, make it worth their effort.
Yeah.
And I have to at least meet theirs. So, it's a beautiful relationship.
Yeah. Jake, I want to go through a couple firsts for you. I'm reading and I see you play a plethora of instruments. Was the saxophone the first instrument you picked up? And if not, what was the first instrument that you picked up?
So that's a fun little story.
Oh.
you know, my dad was, like I said, the band director for the Marine Corps. And we grew up with a piano in the house and we would often sing around the piano. So music was very, very much a part of who I was as a person. When I saw Clarence play, I was immediately like, okay, I want to play sax. So I told my dad and you know, himself being a wise musician, and a typical father, he said, okay, you can play the saxophone, but you've got to play the piano first.
Huh.
So, I was then ushered off to play piano and have you know, piano lessons for the next 3 years or so before I was allowed to pick up a saxophone. And it was a gift. You know, I learned the foundations of music through that.
For sure.
And saxophone was next, and then, you know, having the percussion and the chordal structure and melodies of the piano along with the woodwind of the saxophone, it kind of just opened up the whole to me.
Yeah, so,
you know, from there came everything else.
What about, I mean, and I can assume it would be Bruce and the E Street Band, but what was your first concert that you attended?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah?
I mean, you know, aside from watching my dad
marching,
you know, he had some pretty significant performances as well, I mean, you know, in that regard.
Yeah.
He's a really celebrated band director. But aside from that setting, E Street was my first concert.
It's a good first.
Wow. What a great musician. What a great person in general. That's Jake Clemons playing August 8th here in Chicago at the City Winery. His album came out January 13th, Fear and Love. It was released on BMG Records. You can go and find that anywhere that records are sold. Jake, you know, when you're coming to the city of Chicago, I was wondering, do you have any experiences with the city? I'm sure you've been here a few times. Is there any places you like to go and visit, or what do you like to do to embrace, you know, the city of Chicago?
Chicago's one of my favorite cities in the world, man. I have to say that it's one of these places that has not lost its identity. It's somehow, like, it was built on these certain characteristics of hard work and respect. And also, like, watching out for your neighbor, you know, like, it's a small town in a big city, and it's maintained that somehow. And again, like, back to the whole, you know, the heartbeat of the culture, the fact that music has maintained its importance and its value there, you know, the fact that you can still go out on a nightly basis and watch live bands is really remarkable. I mean, yeah, I've been watching that dissipate all over the world. You know, record stores closing and live venues closing. And, man, I don't know how Chicago stays so true to itself, but I respect it, and I'm grateful for that city. It's one of my favorite places to go to. And honestly, again, just like, you know, walking around the streets and finding new places because you can still do that there is really awesome.
Yeah, that was Jake Clemons. Jake, when you come back to Chicago and you have some free time, we'd love to take you out for a slice of pizza.
Amen.
All right, catch him August 8th at the City Winery. Jake, thank you so much for joining us here on Sound Sessions.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN. If you haven't noticed, we've been kind of bumping in, thanks to Camille, producer Camille, bumping in with the Lollapalooza bands as we're coming. This is the XX.
Mm-hmm. Really enjoying this. This is a great, great song. And they, as Jerry mentioned, they kind of had a smaller show thanks to Chance.
They played tonight. They were going up against Chicago's Pride and Joy right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the odds stacked against them, unfortunately. So speaking of Lollapalooza, this is a weird tie-in somehow. Another attendee could have been the Mothman.
Say what?
So you're familiar with the Mothman from our previous segments.
Of course. The Mothman, he's, as what I recall, there is this kind of enormous creature, like butterfly, winged creature that's floating around. Not butterfly, that's a little bit too friendly.
We'll call it a bat or moth humanoid creature.
That's a good description.
Yeah.
Like a Batman, not the Batman.
Not Batman, no.
But a bat-like man. Roger Bettish, if you're up in the newsroom, we'd love to hear if you have heard of the Mothman as well.
Well,
but I would love to hear some more about it from you.
Well, you know, to refresh everybody's memory, maybe in the early 2000s, the Mothman Prophecies had come out. It's a movie. But they say it's based on true events in Ohio where there were sightings of this very similar to what we're getting in Chicago, very similar moth-like creature, humanoid creature. They describe it as like 6 to 7, maybe even 8, 9 feet tall, wings, but standing on two legs.
Nope.
But anyway, they, you know, there were sightings of it in Ohio, in this town in Ohio, and they saw it on this bridge. There's a famous photo where you see it on this bridge, and then they determined that maybe this is an omen of things to come, and then that bridge collapsed shortly thereafter.
Really?
Really?
What the heck?
Really? And then there were sightings at other locations, at other cities around the U.S. as well. But, you know, fast forward to 2017, here in the great city of Chicago, there's been, I want to say since what, like March or April, there's been a string of sightings around Chicago.
I'm sorry. Right when we were talking about this, there was a winged pigeon that just flew across.
Did it freak you out?
Got a little bit scared. You're setting the stage quite nicely, in fact.
Well, I wanted to bring everybody up to speed. Our friends over at Riot Fest are taking notice. There's a lot of publications, a lot of individuals that are taking notice of this. But there have been more sightings of this Mothman in Chicago.
This is terrifying. It says that there have been more sightings on as recent as July 20th, 27th, and the 29th.
I just had an epiphany. The bad omen that this Mothman is showing us is the sugar tax.
Is he pissed because of the sugar
He's
tax?
He's very upset about the sugar tax. He knew it was coming, too. He tried to tell us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, or maybe the Illinois budget thing.
That's what he's prophesizing.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. The bad things in Chicago, there's a handful. Anyway, so moving on.
There was a witness account.
Well, there's a handful. There's always witness accounts. Let's get into the story that Riot Fest, our friends over there, put out. There's been three more sightings now that have been reported to UFO Clearinghouse. Love that. One on July 20th. One on July 27th, and one on July 29th. These are all very recent. Mm-hmm. And then we'll recollect all of them, because we've got a list here of all of them at the end of the story. But here we go. Here's the first witness account.
Mm.
The witness of the July 27th sighting gave this description of the incident. I was leaving work at about 8:45 p.m. on Thursday night in the Loop. As I walked the 2 blocks to the nearest train station to go home, I saw a large bat-like creature that was perched on top of one of the streetlight poles across the street from the Harold Washington Library. That's right down the street.
Yeah.
Right down the street.
I know that area quite well.
This creature stood about 7 feet tall and was sitting there motionless. Mm-hmm. The creature had a pair of glowing red eyes. That always seems to be a thread in this, mm-hmm. the glowing eyes.
And
a feeling of dread, they say, too, it brings on.
The feeling of dread?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, if you're looking at a 9-foot-tall person with red eyes, of course you're going to be feeling some dread.
Right, right. So anyway, the glowing red eyes that appeared to be fixated on something across the street. It stood there for about 6 seconds. That's when I saw a flash from a group of kids on the sidewalk as someone was taking a picture of this thing. Interesting.
Whoa.
So there's photos out there. It then spread open a large pair of wings, flapped them a couple times, and took off in the air. The girls from that group of kids screamed, and they all took off running. I saw it shot up and over the library and was gone in a matter of about 2 seconds. I was very shaken up by what I saw and talked to my pastor about it at church on Saturday.
Interesting thing to bring up to your local pastor.
It was
I saw the Mothman the other day.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. No, you didn't. It was just Mothman. It's not a big deal. Anyway, so moving on. Oh, and if you do see the Mothman, they recommend our friends over at Riot Fest to report a sighting. Contact Lon Strickler. He's got an email address, but it's protected, and a phone number. But I don't know if we should give that out either. But you just go to the UFO Clearinghouse's contact form. UFO Clearinghouse. Just Google it. I'm sure you can find it for all things paranormal. Let's see. Moving on.
Maybe we should call this number.
Right now?
Yeah.
What if the Mothman answers?
I would love if
Camille doesn't like that idea. It's okay. We don't have to do that.
This is terrifying me. I'm like looking over my shoulder back here.
I'm not like it. Honestly, kind of freaks me out too because
I don't like it.
It's continuing to happen all throughout Chicago. Are you familiar with the Mothman prophecies?
No, I just looked it up. I just looked up pictures right now, and there was some hand drawn.
Oh yeah,
those
are
great.
Those are never good. You don't know.
What's the word? Well, anyway,
repertoire.
Whatever the artist is drawing, it's usually not as scary as the real things, because I know I've seen those blurry images as well, and it's the most frightening thing in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, I see you looking around.
I'm looking out right now, and here in Tribune Tower, the greater Tribune Tower area in Chicago, I can safely report no Mothman.
Yet.
But moving on to the story. The Singular Fortean Society, a website dedicated to investigating the impossible, has recorded over a dozen different sightings of flying humanoids in Chicago in 2017. The most recent sighting occurred just last month in Logan Square when a bouncer at the Owl. I love the Owl. I was just there.
Great 5 a.m. bar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was literally just there like 2 weeks ago. He saw a bat-like humanoid flying over the lot across the street from the bar. I know that lot. I know exactly where this is at. It is weird once it gets, like you were just saying, maybe you were saying it off the mic, I don't remember, off the air, but the fact that, like, where these things are happening are locations that I know so well.
Yeah.
It makes it a little more real, you know?
It's a little creepy because you can picture it in your head. I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. And it's
not
just from Lollapalooza.
I can confirm I will definitely be able to sleep. The sightings have generally taken place in the late evening or at night in or near a park. Witnesses have all described a large bat or bird-like creature with humanoid features. If you see any bat-like humanoids, please contact the Singular Fortean Society, or there's also the UFO Clearinghouses Society, or UFO Clearinghouse. I remember one of the reports was over by Montrose Harbor. Ooh. I live off Montrose. That freaks me out. I'm not okay with that. Yikes. Mothman. Mothman, listen, dude. Are you going to move in? Okay, then yeah, like move in. Like, let's not make it a whole scene anymore. It's getting old. You're getting freaky, and I'm not into it.
Yeah, quit, stop with all the buildup, Mothman.
I know.
Just, you know, show yourself if you're going to be...
Don't say that. What if he just drops right there now? That's not cool. I don't want that.
We're in the Allstate Showcase studio here in Chicago, Illinois. We're totally safe. And besides, we have Camille.
Yeah, Camille's got her backs. She's freaked out over here.
The look on her face.
So I've got...
She misses Dave Plyer right now, might I add.
Does Dave not do a segment on this, the Mothman?
He has not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, he's missing out. All right, so it's 4:15. We could take a break, come back, and continue. Well, I have every incident that's been, I think it's everyone that's been documented in Chicago this year. Do you want to come back from the break and do that?
I'd absolutely love to. In fact, I would love to take some phone calls.
Yeah.
If you know the Mothman himself, if you've seen the Mothman, or if you know the story, give us a call. We'd love to speak to you. 312-981-7200. Call or text. We will take both. We're getting a lot of great texts right now, too. So this is going to be, I'm a little bit frightened, though.
What are your thoughts on the Mothman? Do you think it's real? And if so, what is the omen that he could be trying to send to us, you know? So let's take a break. Mm-hmm. And we're getting kind of weird here. I'm okay with it.
It's getting a little spooky in here.
Well, we had so much fun. You know, we were lightening up the mood with Lala, and now we gotta get a little dark.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're listening to Sound Sessions. We're talking Mothman. It's 720 WGN. But I hear sounds in my
mind. Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. This is Michael and Kevin. We're in for the great Dave Plyer. Dave, happy birthday. It's Sunday. Yeah. I hope you're having a great day. And now let's get back to Mothman.
So you just made some radio magic happen.
Yeah. Well, as we're both producers, so when we hear a story, we kind of chase it.
By the way, I did notice it just got a little darker here on Michigan Avenue. I don't know why that is.
Oh, man. Interesting. That always happens.
But so we were referencing earlier Lon Strickler. He was mentioned in this Riot Fest story. If you do have a sighting of the Mothman, he's your guy to contact. And Michael went ahead and contacted him. And we have Lon Strickler, I think. He's not quite yet.
But, there we go. We have the ready one to go. Lon Strickler.
Lon Strickler. Hi, Lon Strickler. You are on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you. I know this is totally spur of the moment and random, and thank you for joining us like that. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
I got to ask first, are you an insomniac? Are you a night owl? Why are you awake right now?
Well, to be honest with you, with all this that's been going on, I've been getting calls 24/7.
No kidding.
I don't normally get to sleep until about 4 or 5 in the morning.
No kidding. Wow. This is a big thing right now. This is happening quite a bit, huh?
Yeah, it's the information that I'm taking reports is out there, and we've been getting reports, and to be quite honest with you, I have been very impressed with the reports. I think people are actually seeing something flying around Chicago.
Interesting. So what can you tell us about it? Yeah, can you kind of delve into some of these reports and I guess some of the trends that are coming up in the reports?
Well, the earlier reports, in fact, there have been some earlier reports of them. This all started back in 2011.
Oh, really?
There were three reports back then, and then it went quiet. But then around the around March of this year, the sightings started coming in, and we've been getting older sightings as well during this group of sightings, but over the last 2 weeks or so, it's picked up, and in fact, the sightings have become encounters, more or less. It's getting a little more personal. It seems that whatever this being is, it's getting closer to people, and
interesting.
It's kind of causing some anxiety.
So, in the movie, in the Mothman Prophecies film, it represents an omen, I guess. Is that correct, the Mothman?
Well, I mean, it represents a what?
an omen. So, you know, the bridge collapses in the Mothman prophecies.
Yeah, you're talking about a harbinger. Like, well, you know, I don't know if I would buy into that.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, the Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant occurred for about a year before the actual disaster of the Silver Bridge. And then there were a few sightings afterwards. Now, there's a lot of people that say after the fact that they've seen a flying humanoid of some type, the bridge collapse in Minneapolis, Fukushima, or Chernobyl. There have been people who said that they saw a flying being before the disaster, but it's always been reported after the fact. So I really don't know what this is that's going on in Chicago. So these group of sightings are probably the largest since Point Pleasant.
Wow. And, you know, what does a person commonly do when they spot the Mothman? Is it typically, do they try to approach it, or is it just kind of, I saw it, it was scary, and I ran away?
Well, the sightings have been pretty fleeting. I mean, it doesn't last long. This thing, when it flies around, it's fast. And it doesn't hang around long. People have tried to take pictures of it. We just got the first, and I really don't know if you want to call it a discernible photo, but we just got the first one a few days ago. So, but people have attempted to do it, but, you know, they just haven't been quick enough.
So, and Len, where can we, do you have that photo or any of your works posted anywhere? Is there a website or anything we could visit?
Yeah, it's posted up. It's posted on phantomsandmonsters.com.
Phantomsandmonsters.com.
It was posted yesterday.
Okay.
So it's up on the website.
All right. It's a very interesting thing. Now, of course, most of our listeners are thinking, what is your background? Have you had any experience with the Mothman? And what's just like what goes into being the go-to guy for all these sightings? This is a heavy burden.
You know, that I can't really explain. I've had a few experiences with odd things over the years. I've been doing this almost 40 years.
Wow.
Now the fact that I kind of caught this early and kept my eye on the sightings, I think for the most part, people thought this was something that was going to, you know, a couple of sightings and it would go away.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a couple of people working with me now, including Manuel Nobrecht, who has UFOClearinghouse.com in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He's been collecting reports, and he and I have been working together on this, plus a few other people that live in Chicago.
Wow, yeah. Okay, so then when it all comes down to it, what would even happen? Like, what if you catch the Mothman? How do you even approach these kind of mythological but so realistic, frightening creatures and monsters?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of catching it. I think it's more of a matter of trying to figure out what it is, how it's coming here, and where it's coming from. You know, we just don't know. This has been a remarkable set of sightings. I mean, this is historical as far as the paranormal cryptozoology world.
Yeah.
This has just never happened before.
It's really interesting. So, Lon, we'll let
you... And particularly in a large city like Chicago.
Right? Kevin and I were just mentioning the fact that a lot of the places that it's been happening are downtown, near some of our popular beaches.
Parks and beaches, yeah.
Like, where there's going to be a lot of people around. Is this a warning, or should people be afraid, or has he approached anybody and caused any harm, or is it just like seeing an owl in the sky?
I really wish I knew. Yeah, a lot of the sightings have been downtown and they've been along the lake. The last few sightings have been out in the suburbs, so it's getting around.
It's expanding.
I actually believe it's at least three different feeds. I think these three or more are coming in and out of possible dimensional type of portals, or they're at some location or underground or somewhere. But, you know, they just seem to come out, stay around for a couple of minutes, and then leave. I mean, you know, I don't know where they're going. Nobody's been able to track it. It's just an enigma.
Well, Lon, we really appreciate you coming on last minute like this. It's an interesting storyline that's continuing to grow. If people do have any sightings or want to get in touch with you, how should they go about doing that?
All they got to do is give me a call. It's 410-241-5974.
There you have it.
Or they can send me an email at lonstrickler at phantomsandmonsters.com.
And that's the website, phantomsandmonsters.com. Well, Lon, thank you for jumping on with us to shed some light on this for us.
No problem.
All right, take care. And I just wanted to kind of get into these accounts. To wrap it up, because it's peculiar.
It's a heavy topic, and thanks again to Lon.
Yeah,
wow.
Totally last minute. So here's what I have, the ongoing list. So March 22nd, 2017, a semi-truck driver reports strange medical maladies after spotting a flying humanoid flying over a Chicago expressway. A witness walking their dog in Chicago's Oz Park, I know exactly where that's at, awesome park, runs into a paralyzing winged being on April 10th.
Well, there's a lot of statues in Oz Park, so...
Sure, okay, fair enough, yeah.
You know, it could have been the Tin Man they were seeing.
Three separate witnesses report seeing an unidentified flying humanoid over Chicago between April 15th and April 16th. A man fishing with his son on the banks of the Little Calumet in Chicago sees a weird winged being after hearing an eerie, unexplained sound on April 27th. What else we got? A man and his son see a bat-like creature while out on a walk in Calumet Park on May 5th. A family walking along the riverfront sees a flying humanoid cross over the William P. Fahey Bridge within a week of the May 5th sighting. A married couple witnesses... I like that they're giving us all their relationships here.
Yeah.
A married
couple... It's interesting
couple,
that they're doing that.
Married couple witnesses a large black bat-like creature with glowing red eyes. There we go again. Near the intersection of North Wrightwood Avenue and North Lakeview Avenue on May 27th.
That was one of my... Right in that area was one of my first apartments.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, somebody new has moved in.
Obviously. Mothman. I hope the rent is better nowadays.
Two different couples see a large bat-like flying humanoid in the Lincoln Park area on June 3rd. A jogger near Navy Pier sees an enormous bat take wing and fly towards the water treatment plant. I know where that's at, right out in the water there, on June 17th. Getting closer here.
Yikes.
A couple along with a crowd of people sees a large black bat-like creature with humanoid features near the Adler Planetarium on June 23rd. A second report received in early July confirms the sighting details of this report.
So he is, you know, there's a little bit of a connection to all these stories. It's often near the water.
Yeah.
On the coastline. Maybe he's a good swimmer. I don't know. And a lot of it, is it all happening at night, too?
Yeah, it seems to be that way, or maybe like dusk. I've got two more here. Mm-hmm. A police officer, along with the officer's partner and a group of civilians, sees a dark black shadow with wings standing atop a building before taking flight in the Auburn-Gresham neighborhood of Chicago on June 29th. And then, a security person taking a break outside of the Owl.
This is the most recent, yeah.
Well, hold on, was that? Because that happened in July as well.
Oh.
So there's a second one at the Owl, I believe. Well, July 29th. So this is June 30th.
Well, have you ever been to the Owl? This is the one that's kind of iffy because there's a lot of owl statues. So, you know, maybe you're seeing all the winged owls in the Owl.
Well, plus it's a bar.
It's also a bar. that's probably the most important point. After a few libations, I'm sure that you are more than likely to see a little moth.
From the 847, what city had the Batman story? I'm not sure if I understand.
Oh, that's Gotham.
Gotham.
Yeah.
But Gotham City was also Chicago in one of the Batman movies. And yeah. So, I don't know. But anyway, there you have it. The Mothman story is continuing to go on and on in Chicago, and we don't know why. We don't have any answers.
The saga continues, but yeah, we don't have any answers, but I feel like you and I are getting closer and closer to the end of it. I mean, we spoke to Lon, and he was actually pretty legit. I was kind of impressed the amount of knowledge that he was able to share.
Well, good on you for thinking to pick up the phone at 4:15 in the morning and call this guy. Poor guy. But, yeah, so there you have it. The Mothman is around. So
got a solution for you guys.
What do you got, Roger?
Big can of Raid.
Ooh. Or what about, like, one of those giant electric lamps that you...
Oh, yeah, the bug zapper.
Yeah, that could be good.
Yeah, I like it.
That could be real good.
Giant fly swatter.
See, Roger's an ideas man. I like it. Anyway, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get up to the newsroom for the 4:30 news. You're listening to Sound Sessions on WGN.
Ask not
the Beatles.
Those are circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.I.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John hasn't been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
What a regal intro. I love that.
I love that last bit. He's a guy, but I love you.
Well, if you haven't noticed, this is Sound Sessions, Kevin and Michael in for Dave Plyer. And boy, when we do these fill-ins, this is probably my favorite part.
Same.
Get to hang out with our buddy Dave Schwann up in the newsroom. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. Welcome. How you doing?
Doing well.
Having fun?
Yeah. How about yourself? How are you, Dave?
Well, I'm just getting settled in, so ready to have some fun.
Well, let's do that. Let's do just that. This is history for the week of August 6th.
Yeah.
God, is it already August 6th?
I can't believe it. Summer's over. Summer's pretty much over with.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. Dave,
keep
always the optimist.
No, it's not.
So, starting things off in 1782... George Washington creates the Purple Heart Medal, originally named the Military Badge of Military Merit, twice, military, as commander of the Continental Army. The decoration is given to those wounded or killed in action. It was reestablished in 1932. And that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's like the highest honor you can receive in the military. Is that correct?
Getting shot, Forrest Gump got it in the movie.
Forrest Gump got it.
Hey, Dave, do you have any recollection of why they waited so long until 1932 to bring it back?
I don't know. I don't know why it went away and then would come back in 1932. That was in between World Wars I and II. So then they bring it back. No, I don't know. I just don't know why they would, do away for at least a while with something that high, that high of an honor. But... that's it. It is what it is, I guess.
It's very interesting, and it's what a great honor, too. In 1930, Betty Boop debuts as Mac Fleischer's animated cartoon, Dizzy Dishes. Let's take a quick listen to good old Betty Boop. There's the... the iconic theme of Betty Boop, the beep, boop, boop, beep, doop. Great.
I wonder who did that voice.
I was just thinking that. It reminds me of the back in the day when Disney had Snow White, and that was kind of like the princessy kind of voice. Mm-hmm.
Well, asking you shall receive, it was Mae Questel, or something like that. Mae Questel.
A big pioneer in voiceover.
You would be spot on saying that, absolutely.
Wow.
Speaking about a pioneer in voiceovers, in 1944, Smokey the Bear debuts as a spokesperson for fire prevention, and he is still the spokesperson today.
That's pretty cool.
And we actually have a vintage clip of this guy, too.
Once there was a little boy who liked to visit his friends, the trees.
Hello, tree.
Mm-hmm. Hello, boy.
How's the little fella today?
Now, the little boy had a lot of fun with his friends and learned some very interesting facts about the trees. Their roots hold vital soil in place and prevent erosion. Their leaves replenish the oxygen in the air.
So there you have Smokey the Bear being educational and entertaining. Mm-hmm.
You had Smokey the Bear public service announcements all the time on TV when I was a kid. Only you can prevent forest fires.
You do a good Smokey the Bear, Dave.
I grew up with this.
His image has not really changed throughout time, I feel.
No, it hasn't, hardly at all. It's amazing. When you drive through areas, forest areas or something like that where there's a lot of open space and, people could cook out and camp, you will still see a Smokey the Bear resemblance or a character, saying fire danger today is low or moderate,
And he always kind of has that serious look on his face.
He's always pointing at you with that shovel in his hand.
But yeah, so there you have it. Moving right along, in 1945, the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima by the U.S. B-29 superfortress Enola Gay. Here is a newsreel depicting that moment.
From the instant of that first blast until Hiroshima vanished from the list of living cities, closely guarded plants in New Mexico, Tennessee, and the state of Washington continued their work to shorten the war. Hiroshima, one of Japan's arsenal cities, was selected as the first to feel the weight of atomic power. 21 days after the New Mexico dress rehearsal, a lone B-29 was over Hiroshima carrying an atomic bomb. At 8:15 in the morning of August 6th, Japanese time, the first atomic bomb hit an enemy target. The bomb was aimed to explode above zero point, a spot in the city at the junction of the Motoyiso and Ota rivers. The bomb was intentionally set to explode well above the zero point to dissipate its radioactivity.
So how about that? That's really compelling audio.
72 years ago.
That's amazing.
Have you guys ever seen the actual film of the bombing?
You know, For a while I was. It's very interesting to watch the like YouTube of the testing facilities that they would have.
At Los Alamos, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. No, I have never seen the real video of it.
And what was involved with that? First of all, they flew from an island. The island was called Tinian. They left at about 3 a.m. You know, mm-hmm. This was way far away from Japan because they wanted to obviously keep it a secret.
Yeah.
But Colonel Paul Tibbetts was the pilot and left at like 3-4 a.m. to reach their target. But all during that flight, there were guys working in the back of the plane to arm the bomb.
Wow.
You know, it wasn't just sitting there and then they'd fly and drop it and then, fly back. But there was one of the people on board had an 8mm at the time, you know, movie camera.
Very cool.
And, as that bomb exploded, took film from the plane. They said the plane shook when that, you know, they were that high up.
Oh, my gosh.
But they felt the detonation of the bomb.
Are you either of you guys familiar with the term nuclear shadow?
I am, but you know what? It's 5:17 on a Sunday morning. And I can't come up with...
Well, for you know, to refresh your memory, basically, well, I have a definition here. When the bomb goes off, it, much like the sun, it acts in that same way. It emits UV rays.
It emits
thermal radiation, but it will bleach anything it ends up hitting, much like the UV rays that cause sunburns. So there were structures that have like shadows burned into them.
Yeah. That's
really
true.
Amazing
That's
stuff.
True. That's true.
So, but on a lighter note, we do have one
quick text from the 815. The co-pilot from the Enola Gay was actually from Chicago. His name was Fred Olivey, and he retired from being a Chicago bridge tender. And this person named Alan actually met him a few times.
Wow, really cool.
How gutsy would it be to get onto that plane?
I mean,
buckle up as you're going to drop
the ride of your life.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So moving right along, something a little cheerier. In 1948, ABC TV network debuts. WENR-TV in Chicago signed on the air on September of that same year. ABC's flagship productions in the early days were The Lone Ranger, mm-hmm. based on the radio program of the same title, and The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, the latter of which, at 14 seasons, held the record for the longest-running primetime comedy in U.S. television history until it was surpassed by The Simpsons. Holy cow, what a cool little fact that is. And I think The Simpsons got to be in like the 20s now or something like that.
Oh,
or over even.
Yeah, they've been on since late 80s, 89?
Have they been
on that long?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say the 90s, but the late 80s?
I think so.
It was because they were on a previous TV show at the time. I can't remember. It was a female comedian who had her own TV show, and then they just moved on from there.
Yeah, they debuted in December 17th, 1989.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's going to be 30 years coming up.
Oy vey, do I feel old. Let's move.
Oh, listen to you.
In 1956, Elvis Presley released his biggest hit to date, Don't Be Cruel. This was released as a single with Hound Dog. It's the only single in history to have both sides reach number one in the U.S. And just so you know, Dave, keep your ears to the ground, because Dave might be getting Priscilla Presley coming up.
Oh, very soon.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
August marks 40 years since he died.
Yes, that's right. It is 40 years this month. This month, yeah.
We were, you know, we mentioned Springsteen and the E Street Band, mm-hmm. that timeless, you mm-hmm. know, spans all generations. I think you can say the same about Elvis. Just timeless. Music spans every generation.
Absolutely. And just a pioneer of music in general. And the peanut butter and banana sandwich.
That as well. There's a burger joint up in the north side called Bad Apple. They do an Elvis where it's got like peanut butter and banana on it, on a burger.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to eat a peanut butter and banana sandwich?
No.
It's very, very difficult to get down. Like, that's a... You don't understand.
Oh, he did bacon, too, on that, I believe. Peanut butter, bacon and banana, yeah.
Oh, and then he wrapped it up, too, yes. like a burrito. It's a lot of food, and it's a lot of protein. You go to bed right after.
It's an undertaking right there. Yeah, so... moving right along. In 1960, the Alfred Hitchcock thriller... Can we guess? Any guesses, Dave?
Psycho. No, you said 1960.
That's right. You nailed it. There it is. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, perfect.
Hitchcock bought the rights to have Robert Bloch's novel for $9,500. He is said to have asked his assistant to buy all the copies she could find so that as few people as possible would know the film's twist.
Ooh.
Hitchcock insisted that there was no late admittance allowed at showings of the film in order to preserve the twist. This caused lines around the block of people waiting to see the film, which proved to be excellent for publicity. That's really cool, and I feel like you don't really see filmmakers go to those kind of strides anymore.
No.
There's some footage of Alfred Hitchcock and Janet Leigh when the movie premiered here in Chicago, and they're walking around the Loop area, and you can recognize, well, some of the older buildings that are still here. There around the Daly Center, I believe, there might have been a theater, but that was a whole theater district. State Street, Randolph, there, you know, one movie theater after another, and Hitchcock and Janet Leigh are in that area. They're walking around, looking at the city and enjoying it. But
oh my word!
Yeah, yeah. I saw that on a Hitchcock documentary, I think.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the Hitchcock was one of many films and novels to be produced off of the Ed Gein case, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
On that. Yeah.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. He was the inspiration for that.
It was, as they say, based on a true story, or a relatively true story. Yes.
Very interesting. And you know who, another WGN connection here, one of the first reporters on the scene of the Gein household, can we guess who that was?
Amy Guth?
Close.
I'm just kidding.
Mr. Orion Samuelson.
Wild.
That guy is a wealth of knowledge and just some
probably,
of the
stories. He was probably working in Wisconsin at the time.
He was, yeah. We had him on the Bill and Wendy show to talk about this.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was one of the first reporters on the scene at the Ed Gein household when they discovered everything.
Boy, oh boy, yeah. You do learn something, don't
yep.
you? See why I come in?
Yes.
to do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here you go.
In 1968, the Beatles launched Apple Records as their label. It was initially intended as a creative outlet for the Beatles, both as a group and individually, plus a selection of the artists, including Mary Hopkin, James Taylor, Badfinger, and Billy Preston, the fifth Beatle. Apple is still making records today. And this is really interesting because they had this. It's just a fantastic album art. And then there was that big controversy when iTunes came out with
yeah.
Apple. And now to see that Paul's, you know, he's still going through, still going hard at it. Good for him.
I still have my original Beatles Apple 45s.
Really?
Yeah, and I think I may have an Apple LP, probably Abbey Road, which is my personal
Very
Beatles
cool.
favorite. But,
Very cool.
Yes, I still have them.
Do you have that behind glass? That's got to
no,
be worth a lot
actually,
of money.
No, actually, I don't. I've got them. I have them in a box just for fun. I got them out earlier this week because we were talking about music that was going on at Lollapalooza, and they were making fun of me because I didn't know any of the bands there. But I, just for fun, got out some stuff this earlier in the week, and among them were the Beatles 45s that I still have on Apple
Very
Records.
Cool. Very cool.
Yep.
So moving right along, and I want to hear about this next one. I think you might be old enough to recount some of this for us, Dave, but 1969... I mean, that it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Manson family.
Oh, yeah, real good thing, Kevin.
It
the
is.
Manson family.
He's seen some. No, he's saying he got an account of it. Anyway, Manson family commits Tate LaBianca murders. The Manson family was a quasi-commune that arose in California in the late 1960s, led by Charles Manson. They gained national notoriety after the infamous murder of actress Sharon Tate and four others on August 8, 1969, by Tex Watson and three other members of the family, acting under the instruction of Manson. Here is a report by Chicago's own Bill Curtis.
Charles Manson, one of history's most notorious mass murderers. His grisly deeds, his cult family, and his bizarre murder trial are legend.
These murders were perhaps the most bizarre, savage, nightmarish murders in the recorded annals of crime.
There are still these remnants of the Manson family.
In 1970, I had a front row seat at the Manson trial.
Bill Curtis, CBS News, waiting at the Los Angeles Hall of Justice.
So, Dave, do you recall any of this when it was all going down?
Yes, I do. It was one of those bizarre killings that, you know, kind of broke people's, you know, kind of an innocence gone thing, and his innocence lost where something that horrific could happen, you know. And to keep in mind that just 3 years earlier, we had the Richard Speck murders here in Chicago.
Yeah.
But when all of that came out, and Charles Manson with that, just those, that evil look in his eyes. You know?
Nazi swastika in his forehead.
Yep,
and the way in which he got everybody to follow him, you know, charismatic in a terrible way, you could say. It was just really, really, and
if I'm not mistaken, he didn't outright himself carry out these acts.
No,
he got the others.
He instructed them to do it.
That's what's so interesting and twisted about the story.
Yeah.
Very incredible. And you know, a music connection.
Beach Boys.
He worked with the Beach Boys.
Yep.
For a while,
he was a musician.
He wanted to be a guitar player.
He wanted to be a star. Yeah.
Totally wild. Yeah.
There was a Dateline piece on him, I think, on Friday night, and I missed it, but I saw the promos for it. He wanted to get into music, which is why he went to California and just really lost track of
himself.
Yeah,
it was the decline, like you mentioned before, it was the decline of the hippie era. I mean, the Beatles had broken up in 1969. This was going on. It was just disco was happening. Oh, man.
Not yet. Disco wasn't for about another 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Thank goodness.
It's pretty interesting stuff. And he's still around. I think he's still locked up. But he's still alive.
So, yeah, he's been, and you talk about bizarre behavior. If you've seen any of the footage or video of his parole hearings, how he gets up and
he's
rants
out there
about everything.
Yep.
Oh boy!
So before we run out of time here, in 1985, Michael Jackson buys ATV Music, which is every Beatles song, for $47 million. It destroyed the relationship between Jackson and Paul McCartney. This past June, Paul reached a settlement over copyright to the Beatles catalog, avoiding a legal battle that could have had wide ramifications for the music business. McCartney filed a lawsuit in January in a U.S. court to secure rights from Sony ATV Music Publishing following a British judicial ruling that shook up the industry. Michael Jacobs, a lawyer for McCartney, late last week informed a judge that the two sides have resolved this matter by entering into a confidential settlement. Agreement.
Way to
Didn't
go,
Michael
Paul.
Jackson and Paul McCartney do a "The Girl Is Mine" was the name of the song, a duet.
Girl, yeah.
They were
friends, weren't they? Before,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you were singing the Brandy version, though.
Oh yeah, you're right. I totally was. Oh god, it's late. Yeah.
The girl is mine.
And then one more to wrap it all up.
In 1988, the Cubs and the Phillies attempt to play the first night game ever at Wrigley Field, but are rained out in the fourth inning with Chicago leading 3-1.
I have a video of that somewhere, of a videotape, a VCR.
How cool.
Of that.
Really?
Yes. It's in a box at home, too.
You know, your house sounds like a museum, Dave.
All of it's clutter is what it is.
Is it true that didn't the Cubs have, like, the first night game and they were the first ones to use the enormous lights on the field, too? I thought I heard something about that.
Years and years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were the very last Major League ballpark to have lights, you know. August 8th, 1988. You know, was when those put up. I always love the line in my favorite baseball movie, Field of Dreams, when Kevin Costner is out talking with, I think it's Ray Liotta, the character that comes out of the corn.
Yeah.
You know, and there, and And he says, Joe, you guys play baseball at night now? And Kevin Costner says, sure, every big league ballpark has lights, even Wrigley Field.
Yeah, that's great. So there you have it. That is This Week in History, or This Is History. Mm-hmm. We have to get to Walter's perspective, so let's take a quick break, and we will come back to that. Dave, thank you, Dave, for shedding some light on all that with
us.
Sure,
it's always fun to be with you guys.
Great talking to you, Dave.
Yeah.
Well, you are listening to Sound Sessions here, wrapping it up on WGN. And so there you have it. This is Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. Mm-hmm. Calling it a night.
This was fun. I had a really good time, Kev.
Yeah, me too. So I want to say thank you to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Camille. Thank you, Dave and Roger,
you
up in the newsroom.